Brothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion, for we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos, to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com and listen to the live stream there also. You can tune into ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, which is in the Black Belt, and listen to the live stream there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then that TuneIn search engine, just type in time for an awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the auxiliary connection. Again, it's time for an awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening, a radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for an Awakening Media. Is there also the changes have been made to the radio, to the website, taking into account all of the new programming areas for their pages, areas also for their blogs. So a lot of the changes have been made, and there's going to be new things added. So I always say that 90% of the changes are done, but I'll raise it now. 98% of the changes have been made, but it's going to be some new features added by the end of this month because we got some new programming starting in February. But you can still go there now, and it's more interesting content there. Also, podcasts of the programs, the different programs that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So, again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, two special guests will be joining us in the first portion of the program. Back for his monthly visit, the Health Minister for the Universal African Peoples Organization, Health Minister Nathaniel Jordan, is with us. We're going to be talking about fad diets. A lot of people, beginning of the year with these resolutions and jumping on some of these diets, but let's talk about that this evening with Health Minister. Also, cancer prevention among our people and ways to do it. We're going to be talking about that also. In the second portion of our program, Brother Siddiqui Cambon will be with us this evening to talk about the conspiracy in the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King. A lot of things, you know, this month, his birthday is recognized. It was recognized Monday, to be exact. But a lot of things have went on in reference to Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination and the narrative of James Earl Ray being involved. Let's talk about some of the work that Brother Siddiqui has uncovered in reference to the assassination, and that the King family is well aware of and on board with. We'll talk about that in the second portion of the program and a lot of other interesting content that we'll talk about with Brother Siddiqui Cambon. Tonight, we'll get things started with both of our guests after a brief word from our sponsors. Give me 1 second to get things a little queued up here. Again, you can get involved in the conversation with both of our guests by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832 to join the conversation and be involved in the program. Again, the first portion of the program will be Universal People's Organization Health Minister Nathaniel Jordan will be with us for his monthly visit, and it should be an interesting conversation, and we'll be right back to get it started.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not where you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my brother, co-host, and Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here at Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine today. Doing fine. You know, it's a whole lot of energy supposed to be going on in Philadelphia.
Yeah, centered around a lot of those events that you've been talking about. And later on, probably in February, we're going to have Mario Beatty and probably some of the other brethren on that with ASCAC be on sharing with us.
Right.
Looking to get, oh boy, you know, his name always escapes me, and I don't know why, at University of Penn. You know I'm talking about, Richard. How does it get out?
You said University of Penn?
Yeah. That's doing the boys.
Montero.
Yeah, Tony Montero. Dr. Montero. Get Dr. Mm-hmm. Montero on, because I know that he's going to be in the forefront of a lot of the presentations around the boys.
Right, yes.
Yeah, so interesting events going on, especially in February and March here in Philadelphia. Tonight, Richard, two special guests are going to be joining us, and you know, along with the conversation with our listening audience, our monthly visit from the health minister of the Universal African People's Organization. He's with us this evening, as always, with bringing something interesting to the table. Health Minister Nathaniel Jordan is with us. Brother Jordan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, brothers. How are you all?
Doing great, man.
Doing fine.
A lot of big things have been going on since the last we spoke to you. You're not in St. Louis right now. You're in D.C. You'll be there for the next couple of months working with Rock Newman. For the listening audience that don't know, Rock Newman was the former manager and promoter for former world heavyweight champion Riddick Bowe. Since Bowe's retired, I know that Rock Newman's been doing a lot of talk programs, streaming live on the internet, a lot of conscious programs he's been doing, and been active down in D.C. Ever since the Bowe's career ended. But you're working with Rock Newman to work on his health and eating and things, that some of the things that you profess and live your life by. Before we get started with some of the things we're going to talk about this evening, touch on some of the things that you'll be doing, if you can reveal some of the things that you'll be doing with Brother Newman.
Yes, sir. So, you know, it is a blessing. Somebody forwarded him an interview that I did with Black Media Hall of Fame personnel Bernie Hayes from St. Louis, and he watched it, and he became inspired and called me and said that, you know, he wanted to transform his health and get back, you know, to a state of health that he hasn't seen in decades, and he believed that I could be the one to do it. And so I'm out here and I'm strength training them in the gym, waking up those, you know, muscles that have been asleep for years. I specialize in doing that. I use a special type of strength training that's very therapeutic, for seniors, to help them regain mobility and strengthen their bones and muscles. And then of course, the nutritional excellence is always critical, and he's highly motivated, which anybody that invests in their health is always motivated, you know, and so that's the plan, and I'll be up here until he makes a complete health transformation, be with him step by step all the way, and I'm excited, and he's very excited about what can come out of this.
Mr. Jordan, you know, around this time of year, a lot of people that are that aren't in shape, and some that are, jump on that that resolution bandwagon. I'm gonna make a resolution. I'm gonna get in shape. I'm gonna diet. Things of that nature. And you know, listen, you see all these advertisements, all these new meal plans. Diet is a multi-million dollar, and it might be billion-dollar business. All these dieting and diet plans and different companies with different diets. So talk about that from your perspective about dieting. Is that a good thing? I mean, just related to what you do, because I know that you're not there, and I'll use Rock Newman as an example. I know that you're not there teaching him how to diet. You're teaching him how to change his lifestyle and his eating habits, which is not, I don't think it's a diet. But talk about it from your perspective.
Right, and it's a $60 billion a year industry.
Wow.
So okay. This is a $60 billion a year Americans spend on diets, yet we remain the most overweight and sickliest population in world history. Black people, we are the most overweight and sickliest population within the most overweight and sickliest nation in the history of the universe. We're talking about almost 100% of black women are overweight or obese, and almost 90% of black men are overweight or obese, despite the dieting, because diets are designed to fail. This nation is built off of corruption and lies and mass murdering and sickness and death. It's always been like that, and it always will. And it's no different with diets. So the reason why diets don't work is because it does not address the power of food addiction. That's why diets don't work. It does not address the fact that Americans feel too uncomfortable when they go more than a few hours without eating, because when their body enters a state of true detox, which only occurs during a state of fasting, they feel withdrawal symptoms that are mistaken for hunger. And then it draws them back to the substance that will help to alleviate the withdrawal symptoms that they think are hunger. So it's that failure why diets don't work. You cannot portion control micronutrient deficient foods. And that's all the processed foods, the cookies and crackers and cakes and donuts and Breakfast bars and cereals and, you know, the human made foods not made directly from earth by the hand of our creator. And then a diet high in animal protein. Most these days we're eating more animal protein than real carnivores, and micronutrient deficient foods pollute the cells. They pollute the cells because they don't give the body what it needs to be healthy, and it causes a pollution in the cells. And it's only when you're done eating and digesting can your body expel those toxins. It's the same with a crack addiction. You smoke crack, you get the poison in you. 3 hours later, you get the shaking and stammering and stomach growling and rumbling, and then the crackhead moves heaven and earth to get another hit. It's the same thing with the food. So you'll have in January and February, everyone will be trying to use willpower to eat drug foods, because they don't want to give up their food addiction, and the evil dieting industry will play into your addiction by telling you, well, the heck with what Minister Jordan is saying, eat what you want, just portion control it. So there you foolishly listen to them trying to portion control drugs, but after 2-3 months, your willpower is going to go away, and you're going to binge, because the foods are designed for you to binge.
You know what?
Let
me ask you a question, Mr. Jordan, because you've used that term since you've been coming on about food addiction and and detoxing our body. Now, when you look at the label of a lot of foods, you see stuff there that you can't even pronounce. So are you saying that it's additives put in certain foods that make you crave it?
Absolutely. It's intentional.
Okay.
Right. It's intentional. It's a part of greed and also a part of genocide against black people, you know, mainly for it's an overall, you know, tool being used to, you know, to reap in billions of dollars, and as a tool to what I believe to exterminate our people. So that's what I'm saying. Those ingredients, every single component of that Pringle, of that Dorito, of that White Castle cheeseburger and all that other garbage, it's designed to make it to where you cannot and will not stop eating the food. They say it on the commercials, brother.
You know what?
Once you pop the fun, don't stop.
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
if it's something I would like to interject in, the other thing you mentioned about the fasting, and the question that came to my mind was, is there a distinction between regular elimination and fasting, or what you were saying occurs, the elimination occurs during fasting? Is there a distinction? And maybe another way to say it, if you're having a bowel movement, are you eliminating the same things that if you were fasting?
No. Bowel movement, you're eliminating what your body doesn't need from the food itself. So you eat a large salad, and then your body will take in the nutrients that it needs from the salad And then what it doesn't need from the salad, but turn into the stool that gets eliminated. When you fast, your body is repairing toxins that are embedded deep into the cells. It's a true detox. The immune system becomes heightened, and like an army, like a team of Navy SEALs, it can go in and start to make sure that nothing in you is going to give you cancer, that your blood flow is clear. It gets to cleaning itself out. So it's different. It'll happen about, it takes a few hours after the bowel movement, because especially when you're eating correctly like me, you should eliminate, you know, almost within that first hour of eating. And then it will still take a few hours after that when that state of deep fasting occurs. And of course, that's why you want to go to bed slightly hungry, because it's during that 13 to 16 hours between your last meal and breakfast, that's when your body can really get some deep cleaning done. Enter in the cells, cellular cleaning, which is very important, because if your cells are rotten, then you're going to get cancer, because that is the definition of cancer, which I'll talk about more a little later.
Okay.
Right. You understand that, brother?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. Yes, sir.
And I want to transition into the other part, because that's one of the things that we're going to talk about, this cancer, which is ravaging our community and various forms of cancer. But let's go back to talking about the weight loss and the term dieting. Now, you find a lot of our people now, and a large segment, seems like to me, a large segment of our people that are becoming health conscious are changing their diet to being a vegan or a vegetarian and eliminating meat altogether, because there's a lot of documentaries going around now showing how they process a lot of this meat. So a lot of people have become shocked and they want to get off meat altogether. Talk about being a vegan and a vegetarian in reference to weight loss and even dieting. Just talk about it from that perspective.
Right. It's going to have a minimal effect on overall health, because if you strictly focus on what you're not eating, animal, one thing, instead of focusing on the abundance of what you should be eating, you're going to fall right on your face. And that's why when I go in vegan restaurants, even soul food vegan restaurants, all our people are still fat and sick. And the workers are still fat and sick. The same issue is still there. You know, there was a famous black vegan doctor, Dr. Milton Mills, and he is a strict vegan on the highest level. The man got depressed and gained 100 pounds as a strict vegan. Why? Because Cocoa Puffs is vegan. Fried foods is vegan. You can have a processed soy burger and deep fry it in oil with white flour and French fries, deep fried, and slather it with sugared ketchup and barbecue sauce. That's a vegan. But that's garbage junk food. So usually most people, I've seen situations where people, health and weight will get worse being a vegan, because their mind will tell them, well, I'm not eating meat so I can eat everything else. No, we need to focus on a plant-rich whole foods diet. Focus on food, eating large amounts of foods that grow directly from earth, taking away the European influence on our diets and this diabolical eating system that they created, and thinking about how our people ate 500 to 1,000 years ago when we were in Africa. We ate foods that grow from earth, and there's still populations of our people, such as in rural Kenya, and they are forced to eat the diet that they've been eating for thousands and thousands of years, and they get no blood pressure. So that's why vegan and vegetarian, you can sit down and eat some Cocoa Puffs with some almond milk loaded with sugar and drink a Coca-Cola and have a snort of crack cocaine, and you're a vegan. So it's not about just simply eliminating animal. Most of the American diet is already vegetarian. cookies and crackers and cakes and donuts and breakfast bars, and that's vegetarian food. So it has to be more than that. Whole natural plant foods. That's what we must focus on. Or all that's going to happen is that we're going to continue to have this phenomenon where people get frustrated that, why am I not losing weight even though I'm a vegan? I don't eat meat. Yeah, but you still eat a lot of sugar. You still eat white flour. It turns right into body fat. You're still frying your food. You're just frying vegan food now.
With that said, Minister Jordan, it's still running around in my head what you said about the food addiction. And what is getting me is this: the question as you're raising about how much the social environment we're in reinforces what it is to be a vegan, right? And as you say, these products are there. So my question to you is it now you're in D.C. to assist someone to kind of help them create an environment? Not they, yes, they have the willpower, but to help them create the environment so they can do the right thing. Is it important for a person who wants to be able to assist their body in detoxing and taking on these natural products to place themselves in an environment where it doesn't bombard them on the other side of buying into the addiction? Because a drug seller job is to want you to buy the drug. Cool. And America is about selling drugs. So isn't it important for us to understand that it isn't just also what we take in or fast, we also have to place ourselves in the right environment?
Right. Yes, sir. Support is very important, and that's why Rock brought me out here, and that's why I encourage everyone, if you can, to invest in health coaching with me, and I can help coach you through the process, and that's helping him out a lot. Rock really enjoyed our first initial consultation. He really enjoyed it. That's why he had me out there. He said, I want you to stay with me because I need that support. And we all do. We need that knowledge, you know. And so, yes, sir, that is very important to have a support system because most people don't. It is normal to eat yourself to death in this country. It's nothing. It's very normal. If you're an alcoholic, you're ostracized. But if you're a food drug addict, you're fine. That's acceptable in our society to be obese. So our sisters are so overweight that when they attempt to get lean and healthy, they're ostracized. The same with that's the culture we're living in. When you're trying to get off the standard American diet is like being a crackhead in a crack house. Then you get off crack because you become enlightened. But when you're a regular crackhead, you leave the crack house because you can't stay there with other crackheads because they're going to be like, man, you got to get out of here. You're making us feel guilty. Mm-hmm. Well, when you try to get off crack food, you don't have nowhere to go because everybody's still on it. Your life is the crack house. You know, so yes, sir. So support is very important. That's why I have my pages. My Facebook pages, my YouTube videos. That's why I offer the professional health coaching to give people that support system that they need.
Minister Jordan, before I transition off to some of the questions in regards to cancer, to kind of ensure a person being able to succeed in changing their eating habits, because listen, we're all human and we kind of gravitate to things that taste good. Is it important to do our homework? And when I say do our homework, whether it's cookbooks to show you how to prepare certain healthy foods, whether it's looking at a lot of your videos, because I know that later on you're going to talk about some meal plans, and we'll hold off on that conversation. Mm-hmm. But is it important to try to search for foods that you like or foods that you you're easy to acquire a taste to that'll help a person on their way to changing their eating habits. And if you understand my question, somebody might say, well, I'm changing my eating habits. I'm going to start eating turnips or whatever, and they don't like turnips. So eventually you're not going to stay on and, you know, and I'm just using that as an example. But is it important in your eyes to maybe search for foods that you like that are healthy and that you can learn how to prepare in a healthy manner to kind of help you stay on a track to changing your eating habits?
Absolutely. It's important to learn as much as humanly possible about the destruction of our people via the food and medical industries, because being conscious, it will anger you when you start to realize that while they're blindsiding us with sensational stories about what the police is doing, what Trump is doing, 500 of our people are dying every single day from cancer, heart disease, stroke, and diabetes, and nobody's protesting. So learning is key, and then, yes, getting a hold of recipes that you can make and that are easy to make, and every last one of my books have plenty of recipes, and that will help you to start to learn how to make delicious, healthy, nutritarian, plant-rich meals and desserts. But you have to keep in mind with the knowledge that what I wanted to give you a slight correction on, brother, was that it's not so much that the standard American diet tastes good, it's addicting.
Okay.
And an addictive food is different than tastes good. My salad tastes delicious. It's a delicious salad. And many foods that I eat, you would love, because I've had people come over and try some of my wife's black bean brownies and chocolate cherry ice cream, which is made from like three ingredients, but it's not addicting. So it's the addicting. You can eat that black bean brownie and chocolate and be like, wow, man, wow, that's amazing. And then before you go home, you still stop by White Castle's and get a sack and feel like crap after you eat it. That's called addiction. It's called addiction. That's why the crackhead goes back. Not because crack tastes good. It's just addicting.
With that said, you know, brother Jordan, the other thing that comes to my mind as we talk about the food, and you know, Ella, you brought up about this whole thing of dieting.
Mm-hmm.
Because the question that comes to me, and I'm looking at those who have the discipline and have created by utilizing the material that you have produced, Brother Jordan, and other things, that this whole issue around food is it includes politics also, especially mm-hmm. as it affects the black community. So is it unfair for us who are swavering to ask those who have more discipline not to just be able to look at that they can change their diet, they can do the elimination, and they can see the benefit from that cell rejuvenation, but that they also have a responsibility to do the politics of making sure that these foods are in our environment, because they have this big thing about food deserts. So is it important for us to also make it clear that those who are, they have another responsibility along with that?
Absolutely.
A political responsibility.
Absolutely. I'm in touch with several black farmers. There's a brother in St. Louis and a sister, and they're both actively trying to bring fruits and vegetables into the black community. We must grow our own food. We have to stop crying about the white man, the wicked, racist white man, not giving us access to fresh fruits and vegetables, or what he's doing to the vegetables. We need to grow our own food like many of our parents and grandparents used to do. I actually found out that many slaves were actually living much longer than their evil slave masters because they would grow their own food when they could. I found that out recently. I used to think it was the opposite, that it is true that soul food was birthed. Our love for the pig was birthed in slavery. That is true, but it's also true that many other slaves were actually living much longer, and it had a much higher level of intelligence from eating whole natural plant food. So surely, if slaves managed to grow their own food in the midst of that system of extreme wickedness, we can do the same thing. And so I am I'm an advocate of boycotting these death shacks in our communities, these foreigners that come in our communities and exploit our people with dog food. So we do have a responsibility to spread the knowledge and even if it, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, I won't stop until this knowledge covers all of our people as the waters cover the sea. So you're right. I have a responsibility. The Most High delivered me from the standard American diet. I lost 100 pounds and reversed cardiovascular disease in 40 days. And I have a responsibility to our people. And I left my job as a professional slave catcher, because that's all the police are. And he called me to do what I'm doing now, to expose this system of wickedness and wake our people up so we can start growing our own food.
And if I may, Elliot and Brother Jordan, I just would like to also emphasize to the listening audience, well, as you say, you know, to advocate, but and also to look at the policies that are being put in place in our local districts and states and in this country and other countries. So because those policies allow those companies to continue to be those drug dealers in relationship to pushing this type of crack. So I just wanted to emphasize there's also a policy component that we have to be vigilant about, because that's the things that they're saying, and you can see it occur in the schools, of what children should eat. And those are the things that are not necessarily healthy for.
It's the worst type of food. It's the food that's unfit for animals, and they put it in our children's schools. But if our parents were adequately informed with the knowledge, I have a lecture called How the Racist Elite is Using Junk Food to Create Mental Illness and Violence in the Black Community. These foods, my brothers and sisters, is creating the epidemic of self-genocide that we're seeing in our community. It's helping. It's the foundational cause of the destruction of ourselves, the self-hatred and the anger that we see, the psychosis that we see. But if every parent, every black parent knew what I knew about how those foods are destroying the brains of their children and giving them autism, giving them childhood cancer, they would do like I do. They would make their children's lunch. They would boycott the lunch school system. You don't have to feed. They would boycott the lunch. Then the question would be, well, what about those who are so poor that they depend on the wicked government? Once again, that's a failure on our part as a people, to where in the 1950s, my mother was so poor that she ate a plant-rich diet because they had to grow their own food. So my mother was forced to eat healthy. But yet in 2018, if the government isn't feeding us dog food, our children are hungry. That doesn't make any sense.
Brother Jordan, because you just mentioned cancer, and we see now that a lot of cancer now is affecting, it's been affecting adults, but it's affecting younger people. And it's getting younger and younger, where people are developing cancer. You know, you asked me the question in the off the air in a conversation about cancer, and I really couldn't answer the question because I really don't know. Share with our listening audience what exactly. I mean, listen, I know that relatives, close family members and every black person can attest that relatives, close family members, sometimes several family members have died of different cancers. But tell our listening audience, what exactly is cancer?
Right. That's a good question. So cancer is simply the replication of abnormal cells. Our cells, our bodies is made up of trillions of cells. Every part of our body, your nails, your toes, your face, your skin, trillions, your organs, trillions and trillions of cells are the building blocks for who we are. As a natural course of living in these earthly temples, our cells become compromised, or I'm going to use the word rotten. Cells become rotten. The immune system is the military of the body. The job of the immune system is to locate rotten cells, destroy those cells, and replenish them with healthy cells. Are you all following me so far?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's easy enough to understand. Now, in cancer, the immune system loses its ability to keep a system of checks and balances on rotten cells and replenishing those rotten cells with healthy cells. So therefore, what happens is that the rotten cells start to replicate like a snowball rolling down a hill, and they replicate and replicate, and they get big enough to where they form a tumor. Once that tumor is formed, that tumor becomes like a Pac-Man inside your body and will eat up everything inside of your body. It will suck the life out of you until you die. That's cancer.
Now, Minister Jordan, tell me, so are you saying that if somebody has a healthy immune system working at 100% efficiency, that when bad cells develop, they should be able to defeat them under normal circumstances?
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's what happens in rural, that's why in rural China, the rural Chinese women, they die of breast cancer at 1 per 100,000 women, but then over here in America it's 150 women per 100,000. So 150 times decrease in breast cancer death from rural Chinese women, but then they come over here and change their diet, which destroys the immune system, and then they marching around during Breast Cancer Awareness Month like chickens with their heads cut off like the rest of our ones.
So is it true, hopefully I'm framing this right, that cancer cells are always formulating, but these immune cells, keeping them in check, is also always, as long as you're taking in those nutrients from that, as you say, plant-based diet?
Correct. There's the body, as I speak, as you speak, as Brother Bush, as everybody listening speak, rotten cells, pre-cancer to cancerous cells are in the body. But a strong immune system, like a team of Navy SEALs, marches in, kills them, replaces them. No big deal. Natural part of life. Your cells will become rotten, will become precancerous. That's not a big deal. Your immune system locates it, destroys it, and replaces it. The problem is when that immune system is weak and it can't do its job, and then those rotten cells begin to gain strength and replicate, and then you go to the evil oncologist who's licking his chops, because he's going to get a $10,000 commission when he finds that lump or that bump when you take the mammogram or the PSA, and then he says, ooh, you have cancer. When it took 15 to 50 years of you beating your immune system to a pulp for that tumor to have formed to where it was big enough to show up on a test. But the wickedness of it is that even when you go in the oncologist and say, ooh, you have a tumor, you have cancer, in most cases, you can still re-strengthen your immune system enough to destroy the tumor. And that's what they don't want people to know. They don't even want people to know what cancer is, like I've just told you. Then they don't want you to know that all is not lost, even if you have destroyed your body to the point of cancerous cells forming enough to form a tumor. It's still not too late.
Mr. Jordan, now you talked about somebody's lifestyle and their eating habits have led to a compromised immune system that aids the development of cancer or rotten mm-hmm. cells. So how does that work in like a child? Because they haven't been on this earth a long time. So explain to me that dynamic.
But the most saddest and thing that angers me the most when I think about it is that the standard American diet is so evil that that parents can destroy the health of their children when their children. Let me say that again. My son and his future wife at the age of 6, they can destroy their future children right now as they're growing up, because the sperm that my son will use to make his future child is in them. My future daughter-in-law, the eggs that will be connected with my son's sperm is in her now as a 6-year-old. Okay. And how they eat now will affect the health of their child. So millions of grandparents are destroying the health of their own grandchildren to the point where you have two people at age 30 will get married, have completely, they're 10 years away from a cancer diagnosis or a heart attack. And they'll get together and combine a destroyed sperm and egg, and the poor child comes out with leukemia or autism. And then you add the vaccines loaded with hundreds of neurological toxins, and that just finishes the job. Women need to be educated about this. They need to know that the way they're eating now is affecting their unborn child, the way that they're eating now. And they need to understand it. So the medical industry knows this. So their solution is, we'll give them a folic acid pill. That's their solution, because folic acid is a synthetic form of a powerful birth defect avoidant medicine called folate. Folate is a powerful medicinal medicine found in green vegetables that's very important for prenatal care. But so a woman should be told to eat an abundance of green vegetables along with the other G-bombs, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds, and that will give their bodies the natural folate with all the other natural medicines that the Most High put in his foods that will give their immune system and the developing immune system of their child. But the diabolical medical industry doesn't care about that. They don't want you to eat vegetables. They want your money. So they just tell you to take a pill, which actually increases the likelihood of childhood cancer, because the folic acid is not like the folate found in green vegetables. And then now we have a $1 billion industry. Now we have childhood cancer is the third leading cause of death in black children, and the number one cause of death in children overall. Children ages 1 through 14, if they don't die of an accident, or if one of our mentally ill people don't commit homicide on their own children, which we can also link to food, the child is dying of cancer now. So that's the answer, is that so that kicks a huge dent in the whole, you know, well, a child isn't a child unless it's so many months in the womb. No, as soon as that girl is born, the eggs for her child is in there, and what she eats from birth to adulthood will plays a huge role in the health of her future child. So that's childhood cancer, that child had leukemia because of what her parents ate. I'm sorry to say that. I say that I've had people yell at me and cuss me out from bringing that true fact out, but it's the truth, and only the truth can set us free. We're killing our future generations.
Is it true that folate is not produced in the body?
That's not true. Folate is present in the body. It's just that the green vegetables help to maximize most of the nutrients that we get from food. It's helping systems and nutrients already in place in our body, and it just helps to maximize it. So the folate from green vegetables, it helps the folate present in our bodies to do its job at a normally, whereas the folic acid, the synthetic folic acid, it gives too much folate it causes an overabundance of folate. There's a delicate balance. There's a delicate system of checks and balances in our bodies that man cannot and will not ever be able to duplicate, no matter how hard he tries. And so the folic acid, it gives too much folate to the body versus getting it naturally from food. And they know all of this, and they don't care. And you go to Walgreens, and they ask you to give a dollar to St. Jude, and I don't need to give him a dollar. Why don't you just let me come in there and give him an education? But when I tried to do that at one of the prenatal centers here in St. Louis, Missouri, they said no, because only the government can have their licensed brainwashed dietitians go and teach pregnant women about how to take care of their child. So unless you're a government licensed brainwashed puppet for our white supremacist system, you can't teach a class of pregnant women how to eat to protect their children.
Well, you know, the time with these segments always goes quickly. Let's take a call, because we got about 5 more minutes left in this segment. Let's take a call before we transition over. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News?
Yeah, hello, gentlemen. Brother Minister Jordan, I'm glad to hear you. You sound like a young brother that's on it. I was just telling Brother Elliot in the chat section, I did natural bodybuilding and stuff for about 15 years. And I hear you talking about the basics. People that understand food is really for the repair and replenishment of what's already in your body. But I'd like to add something else too. As I studied it, because I did bodybuilding and nutritional training for a while, so I won't try to get into that part of it. But what I have found out is it's kind of hard to break people away from the food substitutes they've been eating now, because in the last 30 years, there's been over 2,500 different ingredients added to foods, processed foods, that the body was never intended to have to deal with. And your body is basically a chemical processing. So when you're adding all of these things, that out of 2,500 different ingredients that are in food now, only about 1,000 of them have even been tested minimally. So you've got so many things disrupting natural body repair in the deep cell sense of it. And people don't understand that one of the first things I used to do with people, I'd ask them when they come into the health club, how often do you go to the bathroom? And some of people would tell me every 2 or 3 days. And I tell them, well, you're eating wrong, and you're eating the wrong stuff, because your body can't process it. You have food substitutes lodged in your large and small intestines that the body can't break down and use for nourishment. So all you're doing is filling your body physically, but you're not putting enough natural foods in there that the body can replenish itself. And the other part I'd like to touch on that you hit a little bit different than what I said, the hardest, the part of the body with the smallest capillaries is the brain. And I've been telling people for the last 30 years, part of the reason you're seeing so much Alzheimer's and dementia is because of those foreign substitutes that have been legally added to food. And I don't just blame it on government. I blame it on us not holding government accountable because corporations have let their insiders run the government and set the standards. And if we can't change that, but I agree with you, we can't take hold of our personal space and start growing our own vegetables. And on that tip, also understand you can't just run and buy seeds. You have to make sure you're buying normal seeds and not these Monsanto seeds that have been genetically modified, because they present a problem in the deep cell system too. I like your work though, young man. I do.
Hey, listen, Brother Otis, you need to email Mr. Jordan, because he's a kindred spirit of yours. He's a power lifter. And you said that you did weight training for a number of years?
Yeah, natural bodybuilding. I worked with a Carlos Rodriguez that was Mr. America back in Tucson, Arizona. And as a matter of fact, I quit working with him. I was in the Air Force, in the U.S. Air Force, in Titan Missiles. And I stopped working with him because he was trying to get me on the juice. And, you know, and no, man, I don't need that.
Yeah, well, you need to reach out to email him. But y'all have a lot to talk about.
If I get his email and stuff in the chat room or I listen and get it, I'll be sure to follow him because I like what he's saying and I can tell he knows what he's talking about.
As soon as
I go muscle up some money, I'm going to have to get both of them because y'all don't know this brother ain't as disciplined as he need to be in order to do what y'all talking about. But I hear y'all. I'm listening.
I'm 64 years old, and I keep laughing because people keep on wondering why I have a six-pack. But Brother Jordan can tell you, I used to do all the weight training and the heavy lifting, but now I do more resistance training and pull-ups and that kind of stuff. But people don't understand, too. That's the other part, too. The human body is made to stay in motion. I heard him talking about children. I tell people all the time, your body's always – the cells are splitting and rebuilding. That's why you can see children run around full of energy, bam, bam, bam. But if you've noticed, the newer generations are a lot more idle, and that's because they're not getting a proper food source to refuel their bodies and help their body to continue to build. I mean, I'm 64 years old, and I get a lot of people keep asking me, how come you still have good muscle structure and stuff? I don't do the heavy lifting anymore, but like I said, I do resistance training, pull-ups, and all of that because – you have to give your body some form of resistance and stay in motion for it to be able to function properly. It's a moving machine. It's made to stay in motion.
Thank you for your call, Brother Otis.
Appreciate your work, man. You cover so many different bases. I'm telling you, I'm loving it.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. Mr. Jordan, you know, this hour flies by quickly, but listen, before we leave you, give out the information because I know you got people out there that want to get in contact with you and our last caller, from Newport News wants to get in contact. So let the listening audience know how they can reach you, how they can get some of the books, how they can get some of the recipes. And listen, you'll be on again, next month and we'll talk about it because I think that you really need, some time of your own, but we'll get that together. But
get through half of what we were supposed to. But my email address is my website is theministerofwellness.com. Theministerofwellness.com. There you will find my products. I have books on reversing high blood pressure, heart disease, cancer, diabetes. I have a book called Eat for Health with 150 Recipes by Dr. Joel Furman. Everything on my site is a tax-deductible donation to Ministry of Wellness, Inc. And so go again, theministerofwellness.com. My email address is ministernathaniel@theministerofwellness.com, or you can call me directly at area code 314-443-8441, 123 videos on YouTube, The Minister of Wellness. Also, you can find me on Facebook, Ministry of Wellness, Inc.
I'm going to be in touch with you, brother. You know that.
Yes, sir. And lastly, and one last thing real quick,
mm-hmm.
I am in Washington, D.C. until June. So anybody in the area on Saturdays and Sundays, if you have an event you want me to speak at or if you want to do a health coaching consultation with me, call me at 314-443-8441 or the Minister of Wellness.com for everybody that's in the Washington, D.C. area or close by on the East Coast. I'll be here until June.
We'll talk soon.
Okay, brother.
Peace.
Take care now.
We're going to transition. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, hopefully our next guest will be joining us, and we'll transition into our next segment. And then until then, you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
My rights away, faster I will run. You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it. Though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, something inside so strong. Oh, something inside so strong. The more you refuse to hear my voice, the louder I will sing. You hide behind walls of Jericho, the lies will come tumbling. Find you, 'cause there's something inside so strong, so strong. I know that I can make it. Oh, you're doing me wrong, so wrong. If all that my pride was gone, oh no. Something inside so strong. Oh, something inside so strong. And sisters, when they insist we're just not good enough, but we know better. Just look them in the eyes and say, we're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway. Something inside so strong, and I know that I can make it. Though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. And all that my pride was gone, oh no. Something inside so strong. Oh, something inside so strong. Insist we're just not good enough. When we know better, just look them in the eyes and say, we're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I want to thank our first guest that was with us, Health Minister for the African Universal African People's Organization, Minister Nathaniel Jordan, was with us this evening in conversation. And he'll be back for his monthly visits next month sometime. We'll kind of establish a time for him to come back. You might hear him more often on Time for Awakening, but we'll work that out because I think he has a lot to offer the listening audience. And that'll be hopefully an ongoing part the Time for Awakening presentation. We're going to transition now into our next guest, part of the Nubian Leadership Circle in Washington, D.C., and a founding member of the Black Community Information Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Brother Siddiqui Cambon is with us. And before we bring Brother Siddiqui on to talk about some of the work that the Black Community Information Center up there in Boston has done, what we're going to do, I'm going to play something, play a segment from Judge Joe Brown, who was on television that did a judge show until he was ushered off TV not too long ago. And hold on 1 second here. Ushered off TV not too long ago. He presided over the trial of Dr. King. I think the grand jury investigation of the Dr. King assassination. I just want to play a segment of what he said in reference to the killing of Dr. King, and that'll kind of segue into our discussion with Brother Siddiqui Cambon, if I can cue this up.
When you were around 19 years old, Martin Luther King got assassinated.
No, I was older than that. I was a senior in college.
Okay, so you're about 22 or so?
I was 21.
21. Okay, so you clearly remember as an adult the impact of that situation.
Well, for me, that was a small impact. I wound up being the last judge hearing the James Earl Ray matter. Did he, in fact, assassinate Dr. Martin Luther King? And had he not died and his local attorney not died in close succession, it would have been my finding that he was not the gunman. That Remington 760 Game Master they've got in the Civil Rights Museum is not the murder weapon. It's not even close. And it was a two-man hit team that killed him from the fire station dormitory. It wasn't the flop house, and it wasn't in those bushes. So, yeah, I got into the deep details of Dr. King, and that 3 or 4 year period, that case was kicking around in front of me.
So you're saying that the James Earl Ray did not kill Martin Luther King?
No, he didn't kill him.
Even, see, even though most people, well, he didn't kill
him,
for, right?
He didn't kill him. It's interesting, the homicide file for the Memphis Police Department reaches the same conclusion back in 1968. They entered their file in protest to the DA's office. Their conclusion was, Ray is not the gunman. He was not even in Memphis that day. We know conclusively where he was.
So why do you think he got convicted for the murder?
Well, he didn't get convicted. He pled guilty. You have to understand, though, the news media puts it out as he was the self-confessed killer of King. That's not true. All through the transcripts, the entirety of the record, he never confessed, and often he said, I never said I killed King. I didn't kill him. I'm pleading cause of Alford. That's A-L-F-O-R-D. It's a moderately old U.S. Supreme Court case, and it says even if you are not actually guilty and you are pristinely innocent, you may plead guilty to the charge if you think that doing so is in your best interest under all of the circumstances as you know them to be, and you're doing so freely, voluntarily, understandingly, knowingly, advisedly, and intelligently. So Ray had gone through all of these and had lost, but there was something that came up. Modern scientific methodology took away one further necessary element. All of these things had to be there, and the state had to have a reasonable factual basis upon which to proceed otherwise. The thing the state relied upon was the rifle. But modern scientific methodology excluded that rifle from being the murder weapon. The bullet they pull out of King's body has a rate of rifling twist of one turn in every 11 and a quarter inches. The rifle that Ray had a rate of rifling twist of one turn in every 10 inches and a bad manufacturing defect that is not apparent on the death slug. He was shot with an XM-21. It's a 7.62 by 51 millimeter NATO caliber weapon with a special stainless steel barrel, a 3-9 telescopic sight modified by a company known as Leatherwood. It was a Redfield sight, and they used special subsonic ammunition with a suppressor on the end to reduce the velocity of the bullet to below supersonic to confuse the sound signature. The shot came from the dormitory in the fire station through a window that had been slightly parted. They were several feet inside. It was a two-man team, a spotter and a shooter. That's what he got killed by. If you shoot somebody at that closer range, which was about 50, 60 yards, with a 30 caliber rifle anywhere in the torso, if the individual is standing next to an emergency room, it's a non-survivable wound. But what they did is they took a head shot they almost missed because the bullet was reduced in velocity. It hit King on the right cheek, took out some molars, wrecked his tongue, came out between his jaws, left the body, hit his clavicle, ricocheted under the skin that covered the clavicle, nicked his carotid artery, went over his right shoulder, down across the back, and lodged between the left scapula and his back skin. And the bullet never penetrated his thorax. Now, that sounds a little weird, but it's not uncommon. So he bled out from the nicked carotid artery, and they almost missed the shot. And Ray was nowhere around.
So, had he lived, you would have actually found James Earl Ray not guilty and released him from prison?
Well, he would have been close. He had another involvement in this whole thing, and that was that he was a willing part of what amounted to a conspiracy. He was one of about four or five alternative scapegoats. And they picked him for a number of reasons. I did talk to a Captain Tommy Smith, who retired as head of homicide for the Memphis Police Department, who was the first detective on the scene. He said the shot couldn't have been from the flop house because there was a window that he was supposed to fire the shot out of, and who told me that, I never found out. He said, but there was a limb about this thick growing diagonally through the window, and you couldn't even see the Lorraine Motel from that location. He said, I came back with crime scene in about an hour, and the whole tree had been cut down, and I found out there was a cut-down order sent out to the sanitation department early that day, but they were on strike, so they weren't going to cut it down. So, you know, it gets back to the show. We're going to start bringing some reality back to television that's not the kind of dysfunctional reality that's so popular these days. We're going to start, you should have gotten this in the fourth, fifth, or sixth grade. You didn't. I know you didn't, but here's what the rule is, and let's see if you can become good Americans because of it. Be brave, be honorable, be forthright, stand up, be counted.
Maybe that's the reason why Judge Joe Brown is not on television right now. But let's go to our guest. Brother Siddiqui Cambon is with us this evening. Brother Siddiqui, how are you, sir?
Not bad, yourself, sir.
I'm glad to have you on Time for an Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing there, Brother Siddiqui?
How you feel?
Good.
Brother Siddiqui, listen, before we get into the meat and potatoes of what we want to talk about, because we want to transition off into a few other things related to this, let me read for our listening audience, the letter that you put out on January 1st through the Nubian Leadership Circle. It says it has been a tradition to honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. by recognizing his birthday on January 15th as a holiday in this country. All of this as we approach the 50th anniversary of his assassination on April 4th, 2018. What is disappointing about this situation is the fact that the parties guilty of the assassination of Dr. King have never been apprehended. After the assassination, a white male named James Earl Ray was charged with the killing, which he eventually denied doing. In fact, after visiting Ray in prison, the King family, led by Ms. Coretta Scott King, came away convinced Ray was not guilty of the crime, and they filed a civil suit in 1999, the King family versus Lloyd Jowers and other unknown conspirators. In the courts in Memphis, Tennessee, there was a lengthy trial, and the jury returned with the verdict that Dr. King was assassinated due to a conspiracy by agencies of the federal United States government. The most disturbing aspect is that we honor Dr. King with a holiday on his birthday, January 15th, and as previously mentioned, the 50th anniversary of his assassination is approaching very quickly, and his assassins have never been brought to justice. In that regard, our organization, the Black Community Information Center, located in Boston, Massachusetts, have since the year of 2000 sent letters to various presidents, Clinton, W. Bush, Obama, requesting a special grand jury be established, but to no avail. Last year, and again, we are calling on the Congressional Black Caucus to set up in leading the effort to seek justice regarding the case. We strongly suggested to them that those of you reviewing this latest blog entry to Google www. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Assassination Trial Transcripts .com to review the facts of the case. It is the King family versus Lloyd Jowers and other co-conspirators. Also in 2002, former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney filed the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Reform Act that would release important trial-related material that had never been sealed, that had been sealed until the year 2027. That information is long overdue to be released for public consumption and review. There is no excuse, as the stage has been set, for the Congressional Black Caucus and African Black community at large to demand and take the needed action. In fact, everyone is urged to contact the Office of Congressional Black Caucus Chair, Congressman Cedric Richmond, at 202-225-6636 and insist that his office and the body of the CBC preside and take the lead in pursuing justice for Dr. King and his family. Brother Siddiqui, talk about the work that you and the Black Community Information Center up there in Boston have been doing on this since 2000 in regards to the conspiracy in the killing of Dr. King.
Yes, sir. Well, essentially what it is that, you know, you mentioned the Black Community Information Center here in Boston. We're an all-volunteer organization. And so essentially, myself and then head minister of Muhammad's Mosque number 11, Mr. Don Muhammad, and former city councilor Chuck Turner, we were made aware of the trial transcript that you mentioned in your statement. And so read the transcript, and of course, I read it three times because I couldn't believe what was before my eyes. And so essentially, that's when we actually began the campaign, hopefully, to mobilize black folk across the country to take the action necessary to get the justice that you referred to. So when you look at the transcript, like you said, you can Google it, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Assassination trial transcript, and it lists everything there that went on. First and foremost, they talk about the whole aspect. Let me just say that, you know, it was a jury trial.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the civil suit filed by the King family, and as you mentioned, and they visited James Earl Ray and came away convinced that he was not the assassin. And that was the motivation to file the civil suit. And it was, you know, the King family and versus Lloyd Giles and other unknown conspirators. And the jury came back with a verdict that Dr. King was, in fact, the victim of a conspiracy of assassination by agencies of the U.S. government. So on the day of the assassination, what happened was that he was I don't have the name of the hotel, but he was supposed to stay at a hotel in Memphis that actually was used primarily by white folks. And so there's a Reverend Billy Kyle and others, but particularly Billy Kyle, who is now deceased, who in fact convinced Reverend King that he should in fact go to the Lorraine Motel because it was in the heart of the black community. And so essentially what happens is that you could actually Google a piece by Dick Gregory about the assassination of Dr. King. And after the assassination itself, this Reverend Kyle was talking about the assassination, and I don't know what he was thinking about. He said, but he, and this is a quote, that as he stepped aside for a clear shot, and, you know, he had this stunned look on his face, realizing what he said, and everybody in the crowd started yelling at him, saying, what did you have, you know, that type of thing. So, but on the day of the assassination, the basic scenario was that Dr. King was at the Lorraine Motel, and then, of course, in close proximity was this restaurant that was owned by, you know, a little raggedy restaurant owned by this Lloyd Giles. And he, in conjunction with another conspirator, allegedly were the ones who, you know, were actually involved in the actual shooting. There's this mystery person called Raul, the same Raul that they talk about in the Kennedy situation, that has been mentioned as possibly the one who supplied the weapon that's used. Now, on that day, the firehouse that Judge Joe Brown was talking about, that is, you know, near this Lorraine Motel, mm-hmm. the black firefighters were, in fact, dismissed on that day that were assigned to the firehouse. Now, according to the transcript, there were U.S. Special Force sharpshooters on the roof of the firehouse on that day. And according to where the transcript describes, they were there as backup to the actual shooters. Now, the transcript basically states that the actual shooter, and of course, you know, there's, you know, there's some mystery on that, was this white police lieutenant who's now deceased, who was seen running to a police car where there was another cop waiting there for him. Now, there was a brother who was a taxi driver who was waiting for a fare who saw this white lieutenant running to the police car, so he thought it had something to do with the shooting that had just taken place. This same brother who observed that, who was a taxi driver, they found his body 4 days later floating in a river because he witnessed what he had seen. Now, as I said, on the day of the actual assassination, you had the firehouse situation. Black police officers were dismissed on that day. And at the actual Lorraine Motel itself, what happened was that a chambermaid, and here's another piece of controversy, a chambermaid was instructed to go and tell Dr. King's personal security at the Lorraine Motel that their services were not needed that day. And I know this is going to be difficult for folks to basically digest, but the person who told the chambermaid to deliver this message was the Reverend Jesse Jackson. So there you have the basic scenario. What's being James Earl Ray, as was mentioned by Judge Joe Brown, was not even close to the scene of the crime that was perpetrated on that day. So what has happened is that since the year 2000, we have sent letters to various presidents, whether it be Clinton, W. Bush, or Obama, saying essentially that you should instruct your respective justice departments to establish a special grand jury to bring these folks to understanding the fact that that was not really realistic in terms of thinking that they were going to do that, but we, what we were trying to do is just to build a base, if you will, of momentum with the hope that by publicly putting out here, and I should say that one of the things that has been a positive, even though we're disappointed that action has not been taken, is that the conversation has moved away from James Earl Ray being the assassin to it being general knowledge in many respects that it was a conspiracy to assassinate Dr. King. What has been disappointing is the lack of energy or action taken by us as a black community to seek this justice. Now, you've got Brother B. Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, leadership right across the board are aware of all these details, but all you hear about is a breakfast all across the country. In fact, Boston has a major breakfast here every year, the first first breakfast was ever established in the country, monuments, and so I can't put any energy into that because of the fact that I say to myself, you know, you on the one hand, you're honoring Dr. King, but on the other hand, we as a community dishonor him because of the fact that we're not taking the action that's necessary to see to it that the actual perpetrators are brought to justice, which to me is a disgrace. You've got Israel still apprehending Nazis who are 100 years old and bring them to trial. You know what I mean? It's that type of situation. So if, you know, this is a black man who died for us, whether you agree with his politics or not. And for us to sit aside, we got the 50th anniversary coming up, and there's going to be all kinds of theatrics talking about the 50th anniversary. But the question is, where's the groundswell of action that we as a community should be taking to see to it that the justice that the King, Dr. King and his family deserve happens? And to this point, it hasn't. Now, there are some folks who've actually accused me of being obsessed with this. And I'm saying obsessed. This is not an obsession. This is about the fact that every year, in terms of pursuing this whole piece, that there's a hope that, you know what, this is it. The community's going to step up and do this. And I know there are those who said to me that, well, Siddiqui, you know, it's unrealistic for you to feel that the very folks who perpetrated the crime are going to go after the folks who did it. And I'm saying, I understand that. I said, but how can you say that to me and we aren't doing anything? The bottom line is that we know that this country and this government did not want a holiday in honor of Dr. King. But the black community stepped up and fought for it. So if we can fight to get a holiday for Dr. King, you know, what's the hesitancy in terms of seeking justice for Dr. King? I don't know, brothers, if it's fear of taking on the government and the forces that perpetrated this crime. I'm just not sure what the deal is. We just keep pursuing this. Like I said, you know, we reached out to the caucus, so it's really confusing. It really is.
Brother Siddiqui, you know, let me say something, right, because I want to touch on some of the things there. When you told me about the transcripts, because I've never read them, you know, anybody that got two brain cells together know that it was involvement, just like in Malcolm, with the government killing Dr. King. But when you read the transcripts, listen, I'm going to mix this into the conversation because you've been working with this in conjunction with the King family. They know of your efforts.
Absolutely.
Now, and you read the transcript. So let me, I'm going to mention some things and just get you to expand on it from your understanding. I'm reading the transcripts, and it mentioned that during the trial that a Reverend James Lawson, who was an associate of Dr. King, testified that King usually stayed in white motels, and he convinced King to stay at the Lorraine. But later on in testimony, Walter Bailey, who owned the Lorraine, which was a black-owned hotel, said Dr. King stayed there all the time. And then his daughter testified that he stayed at the place at least on 12 or 15 occasions since 1958. And that that he was supposed to stay there, but he was supposed to stay in an interior room, that he had gotten a call from, I think it mentions Abernathy. I got to find where it stated at, that to move his room to 306, it was on the balcony.
Correct.
Talk about that, because, and I'm going to get to the other part about some of the close associates, but when you read this and see conflicting testimony by other pastors, what is that telling you? I mean, go ahead before I accept. I want you to talk about this. You worked on this. Go ahead.
Well, the bottom line is you're correct in terms of clearly there were some folks who were complicit in terms of this conspiracy that was perpetrated against Dr. King, resulting in his death. And like, for instance, the photograph of Dr. King there out there on the balcony. Now, the person who took that photo was somebody who was trusted throughout the ranks of the civil rights community. So that's why they were able to be there and to take that picture. And this person, come to find out, was an FBI informant. And so I'm sure that there are others who were involved also, who are complicit. And I don't know about you, brother, but I'm just saying that, you know, and reading the transcript, each time I read it, and it's, you know, I just get more frustrated because of the fact that it's not like we're saying, look, you know, we need to find out what the details are. I mean, that clip that you played to Judge Joe Brown was excellent and an example of the fact of all the information is out there. And our folks know about this. In fact, the Final Call about 2 or 3 years ago did a major front page story on this, interviewed myself and others. So it's not that we don't know. It's like, I don't have an answer. Like, we're in fear of this. And for the life of me, I don't know. I don't have the answer. If I had the answer, I wouldn't be talking right now with the frustration that you're hearing in my voice. But yeah, clearly, there were folks who were involved in, like I said, I mentioned this Billy Kyles, and you mentioned a couple of folks there that had to have been involved in this conspiracy that were on the inside and working. You know, of course, you know, you've got the J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO and his hatred of Dr. King and all of the different negative attacks that they were making on Dr. King, even to the extent trying to convince him to commit suicide. If you don't commit suicide, then we're going to let your wife know about some of the extramarital activities that you participate. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling. And, you've reviewed it. I encourage your listeners to just go and to look at this transcript. But what's much bigger is that we have to demand that there be justice. And the only way that justice is going to happen is that we as black people in general have to step up and push for it, or else it's not going to happen. You mentioned in the letter there, the piece there by former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney.
Yes.
2002 filed the Martin Luther King Jr. Reform Act saying release that material immediately because it's pertinent to the details of the assassination. It's sealed until 2027. Now, why would you seal information of that magnitude if you don't have something to hide? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why would that sister file that in 2002, and you've got the Congressional Black Caucus right there, why aren't they pushing, saying, we want this material released right now? But are we, you know, I'll give you an example of what our thinking is. I spoke to Congressman Cedric Johnson's, you know, the chair of the CDC. I spoke to one of his people in his office the other day, because, you know, we sent that letter to him and trying to get him to move with the rest of the caucus on this. And the young lady said to me, well, sir, could you quickly move through what you got to say, because I have other constituent calls. And I said, young lady, we're talking about the assassination of Dr. King, and you're telling me to hurry up so you can answer other calls? I said, your mindset is part of the problem that we have out here. Dr. King gets assassinated, and you're talking about constituent calls. So I don't, maybe you have some answers over there, brother, in terms of yourself or your listening audience, but, you know, we just keep plugging along with this, hoping that there's going to be a break and that action is going to be taken. But it's just ridiculous that here we are approaching the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination, and nothing has been done. It's ridiculous.
You know, I want to pass the mic to Brother Richard, and then we got some calls holding. But, you know, reading this transcript is, to use the term fascinating, it's tragic. You know, it was testimony by the daughter of the owner of the Lorraine Motel that Ralph Abernathy called down there and asked the room to be moved because they were in the interior of the hotel.
Yes.
It says that Abernathy said during testimony that he and Dr. King didn't ask to be moved to 306. No, wait a minute. That he and Dr. King were moved to 306 at their own request as soon as it was vacated by another guest.
Yes.
The hotel owner, his daughter, said that they specifically asked that Abernathy specifically asked to be moved to 306. And then it talked about King's security being taken away by an SCLC minister, that the securities were removed. You alluded to the fact that Jackson told Maid that they didn't want maid service. I mean,
he told the chambermaid to inform Dr. King's personal security that the services were not needed that day.
You know, let me go to the callers because I want to mention something on this, but I want to. Richard, you want to say something before I go to the phones?
No, okay,
Let me go to the phones. A couple of these callers in here. Let's go to 267. 267.
Hey, good evening, Brother Elliot. Good evening, Brother Rich. And good evening, Brother Siddiqui.
Yes, sir.
You know, I've been listening to you, Brother Siddiqui. I guess when I got SiriusXM, I used to call into Reverend Al's show and used to say the same thing back then. And I heard your conversation with Professor Smalls last week, and what I said, like Brother Siddiqui, and you have uncovered not only now the transcript is there for us to believe, but what you're doing, you're telling, and I agree with Professor Smalls when he says those people that you've taken this to are not our leaders. And they're letting you know they're not our leaders. Basically, if they were some type of leadership, they would have picked up the torch and fought for this thing through court. But you have exposed what I've been trying to get across to people for years. When Bill Clinton was in the White House, I seen that was one of our enemies. And I became an independent then, and I'm still an independent to this day. We have no friends in this government. And I don't, and I have to give you a lot of credit. You are exposing that, brother. It's just that I understand your frustration because you want justice for Dr. King. I want justice for Dr. King. But we cannot go to an unjust system and get justice because they were all guilty in it. So, but brother, look, that's your passion. I've been listening to you for a long time. I appreciate your passion. I want justice for all our slain leaders. But this is such an unjust system. And what you're doing, and I don't even realize what you're pulling the bed sheets right off of it. You're letting them know about the Sharptons, the Jessies, all these puppets that we call the CBC. So I give that to your credit, brother. I just had to call in and let you know. I've been following you for a long time, and I appreciate your passion. But we might have to go another route. But first thing first, you have pulled the bed covers off this unjust system, and I just had to let you know that. So that's all I wanted to say, Brother Elliot, Richard, and Brother Siddiqui, and I do have your contact information. I'll be sending you an email. Just let me know how I can contribute, brother. But I've been hearing it, I believe that, and you know, like I hear you and Elliot say, you're frustrated and you don't believe this is happening. I believe it because I see what we're looking. I see what we're fighting against. So, you know, I just had to call in, man, and say I appreciate your hard work. Hopefully the blinders can be taken off our people and they can see. I mean, stop crying about Hillary Clinton won our electoral college votes and you know, and all this nonsense, because that's just nothing but another enemy that we have to fight against. So, brother, I just had to call in and give my 2 cents. That's all.
Thank you for your call, man.
Yeah, can I just respond to that?
Yes.
Let me just say, just to offer some clarity to the brother, is that, yes, in terms of Dr. Smalls and others, let's be clear that in terms of the campaign that we've been doing through these years, our energy has not been directed towards the government with the belief that they are the answer. It's just been part of the strategy so that, see, we put general information out there to folks talking about what we have done to the general public. So the piece that's frustrating for me is that the bottom line is that folks in our community, conscious community, right across the board, know the fact that there was a conspiracy. So the folks who say, well, you know, Siddiqui, why are you wasting your time appealing to the very folks that you know probably perpetrated the crime? That's not an appeal. That's just part of the strategy, saying that we sent letters to them. But the very folks who are making those statements, they're aware of it. And if you're aware of it, and I ain't talking about the Sharptons, I'm talking about, I know the Sharptons and other folks like that. I'm going to move. But the bottom line for me is that grassroots folks all across this country are aware of the truth. But we're not doing anything. That's the frustration. I'm not looking for the quote-unquote injustice department to do this. That was just part of our strategy to put information out there. Most of the information we put out there, like I said, the final call, doing that, please, has gone to the general public in terms of our community in regards to what we have been doing. We've been saying to folks, we as black people who stood up, fought for the holiday, where are you now? Grassroots folks, conscious communities, nationalists, everybody, where are you now? That's the question. It ain't about the government. It's about what are we doing? And it's that silence that's frustrating. I know he brought up Dr. Smalls. I know Dr. Smalls. I got a lot of respect for him. But Dr. Smalls knows the truth. Rather than saying, Siddiqui, why are you appealing to the government? It's like Dr. Smalls and a lot of the folks that you know who are conscious and have done a lot of hard work out here, why aren't we doing what's necessary to make it happen? That's the issue.
Wow. Thanks for your call, Brother Ralph.
All right.
Let's go to 702, area code 702.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. Hello, everyone. I just actually just had more of a comment. I'll make it quick. I had recently went to the National Civil Rights Museum,
mm-hmm.
and some of the things that I noticed, because I actually I also read Mrs. King's book, My Life, My Love, My Legacy, and she does mention it in there. So I definitely at least, you know, appreciate her book because, you know, of course, that I wasn't taught in school about, you know, who actually murdered Dr. King. But I just wanted to say within the museum, I felt like that museum was definitely not made for, you know, black people. And they did not really even, you know, address the give proper context to some of the things that they were even displaying in there, like the real reason for the bus boycott. And then also with Dr. King's murder, yes, they had everything as it was at that day, like, you know, the recreations, like the cigarettes and the, you know, the ashtray and stuff like that. But it really didn't make too much mention or any mention at all as far as, you know, what actually transpired and everything that the King family and everyone else had did or was going through to actually get the truth out. I just wanted to say that I definitely appreciate all the information. I'll meet my line.
Thank you for your call, sister.
And I think it's really important to understand the fact you mentioned before, the fact that, you know, Mrs. King sent us a letter expressing appreciation for the work that we have done. But what she said in the letter was that we as the King family have done as much as we can, talking about the trial. Now it's up to the community to seek and bring justice to the case. So that's the piece that I'm talking about. That's what the King family was looking for. And where's the groundswell that's needed from the community to make this happen? It has not happened, and we're approaching the 50th anniversary of assassination. So I'm sure that Mrs. King is probably turning in her grave right now because of the fact that, you know, there's nothing but a silent wall out here in regards to doing anything about this. And, I just, you know, it's hard for me to even fathom that we as black people, African people, are in fear of taking this on and getting justice for the King family.
Go ahead, Richard.
You know, I have to listen because I haven't read the transcript. And Brother Siddiqui, until Brother Elliott brought you to my attention, I wasn't aware of it. So, and hearing, you know, now the context and the campaign of moving this forward, whatever I have in my mind is the question is really really simple as I see it, and irrelevant. And I apologize for that. So, therefore, I wanted to really get, I hear your frustration about in presenting it. It's two sides to it. Isn't it the same context of, and you being a community organizer in Boston and the work you've done in Boston around, and I've heard some other things around what black people should be doing in order to exert its power. Isn't this here the same kind of not taking the ball and running with it in relationship to dealing with this King? What we know, not even we feel, but the facts are there, dealing with this King issue as far as taking that ball and running with it. Isn't it the context the same out of your particular experience of what we should be doing in our communities and as also in relationship to what we should be doing in dealing with the perpetrators of King's assassination?
Absolutely. I'm in total agreement with your statement, brother. I mean, it seems like we pick and choose. And, you know, my whole thing is that the 50th anniversary and having all the facts about this situation, and, you know, just gets back to what you're talking about is, you know, and let me just say this as it relates to what you were saying, brother, is that several years ago, Dick Gregory was in Boston for a conference. And so he approached me, and he said, well, brother, he says, I was talking to some folks, and they pointed you out to me. He says, do you know what you're getting into? And I said, well, yeah. I says, myself, my colleagues, we know what the deal is. So recently I've done some reflection in regards to what Dick Gregory said to me. And I said, you know what? I come to the conclusion that he wasn't talking to me about being involved with pushing this investigation. I believe he was talking within the context of what you just said, brother, is that by saying, do you know what you're getting into? I believe the message he was sending to me is, are you going to get black people to be able to move on this? That's what I think the message, you know, I've been doing a lot of reflection in terms of what's going on with that, and I'm saying that maybe this is what Dick Gregory was saying to me in terms of saying, do you know what you're getting into? In other words, is the support going to be there to move this? Not are you in fear of taking on the government? You know what I mean?
So. Right. And, if I can ask one more question before you go to the callers, in that context, because it seems that we have to understand that you're exposing the leadership, that what's considered the people who are in these institutions. We've heard in this program, you know, through this program, say, and we just talked about it Friday in relationship to the reparation bill, H.R. 40, as far as the hesitancy of these individuals in these institutions making any move. We've talked about, you know, Sharpton and Jesse's mismaneuvers as far as being a part, Jesse being there and then still being a part of institutions. So does this, in your reflection, did you get a chance to reflect on, does this say how much control these institutions, maybe not those individuals, but those individuals have over the motivation within the black community
on any level, because we have to understand why, I mean, the evidence, anything else, we would be taken to the streets about it. But here is something, it isn't, as you said, it's moved from James, we even say it's moved from James L. Jones to the conspiracy. So we even reclassified the context of it. But as you're saying, and we got the evidence that brings it forth, but we're not moving on it. Is it because these people do have some kind of control over the energy within our communities? Is that what it is? Or is it just complacency based off of your reflection about this?
Well, you know, in many respects, you know, the folks who are featured out here, when you talk about them, whether it be like with Reverend Shopton, I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, no one talks about the fact that that he was formerly an I shouldn't even say formerly an FBI informant, because of the fact that I remember I saw there was a show some years ago, and this higher up in the FBI was being interviewed, and the statement was made by the host of the show saying, well, with such and such being a former FBI informant, and the FBI person said, excuse me, hold me. He said, there's no such thing as a former FBI informant. Once we got you, we got you. And so, you know, I sincerely believe that there are folks out there, you know, that the purpose that they're serving is to see to it that, you know, that there's a certain amount of subversion in terms of keeping a cap on the energy of black folk out here in terms of what we do. Because yes. of the fact that you cannot have an organization such as National Action Network or even Jesse's if you don't have a large infusion of white money from corporate sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
So if you aren't doing what you're told to do, then that money dries up. So it's, you know, it's complex, but I believe it's real, brother, in terms of what you're saying.
And I just want to, my thought in pushing that forward, because I think that we have to understand, even though those are the visible heads, when we're talking about now that we can say to, we can blatantly in our informal conversations say they are informants, there are others below that are more intricate within the community that does also, I would project, keeps that diffusion so that these issues don't take hold or get distracted when they come about. And we don't even know who those individuals are.
Yep. Well, I agree, you know, that there are forces out there that are not working in the best interest of our community. And, you know, I just tell people, I said, my biggest thing, having been out here quite a few years, is that just work with young people. And we have to work through this whole thing because of the fact that what I'm finding is that there's a lot of I versus we,
yes.
And that's something that we really have to fight through. And that, you know, there are some folks out there who consciously are blocking, but then there are folks who are unconscious and don't understand the fact that they are blocking.
Yes.
You know, Richard, I think a lot of that narrative also is other people setting the tone of the conversations that we have about some of the people who has been leadership on the forefront, or at least grassroots leaders. I'm not talking about these political leaders, because the sister out of Las Vegas that called a few minutes ago said that when she visited the Civil Rights Museum, these things weren't discussed. You know, they just had stuff, cigarettes and ashtrays and stuff, but the intricate things that need to be talked about is never discussed. And then we let other people set narratives about his whole life centered around I Have a Dream.
Yes.
When we played a portion of the speech 8 months before he was assassinated, where he basically apologized to his own community about that dream. I mean, in fact, when we go to a break, I'm going to try to find that piece and play it again. But I just want to say that we let a lot of these other folks, you've got a Jewish guy that's head of the Martin Luther King organizing celebrations here in Philadelphia, a Jewish guy. We let other people, Jews and others, set the narrative on how we recognize our leadership. Who in the hell does that? We don't set the narrative how other people recognize their leadership and what they do in remembrance of them. I mean, so our people, we got to wait. You know, I quote that verse out of the scriptures about our people being destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But I don't know a more truer verse in there than that. And it goes to what you said, Brother Zadiki. Some of our people do it willingly. But you got a large segment of our people that don't have the information. And they're operating in the dark. Let's go back to the phones here and get some more callers involved. Let's go to 215.
Yeah, hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, man?
How are you, sir?
Hey, Brother Richard.
How you doing, man?
Hey, Brother Siddiqui, how you doing, my dear brother?
Yes, sir.
How you feel tonight? Good to talk to you, Brother Siddiqui. It's an honor, man. It's an honor.
Goes both ways.
Yes, sir. Brother Siddiqui, I just want to give a few comments to y'all. It's ironic y'all talking about Dr. King tonight because I have been an ardent critic of our black radio station here in Philadelphia, our, you know, black terrestrial station, because they, like Brother Elliot just correctly said, Brother Siddiqui, they always do Dr. King a disservice because every holiday, now they was a little better this year, because of my constant complaining, they was a little better, they played some of his latest speeches, but he always for years just played that I Have a Dream and all that, and I don't want to keep hearing all this, I want to hear that Dr. King that was at Riverside Baptist Church, the so-called militant Dr. King, you know what I mean? That's the King I want to hear. But anyway, Brother Siddiqui, are you familiar with the book by Brother William Mackey, where he was talking about the betrayal of Dr. King by people within the NAACP, even his so-called inner circle? Because that is something that definitely need to be discussed, because you're talking about, because I definitely to this day, Brother Siddiqui, believe that Dr. King was set up by his own inner circle that was working for that no-good homosexual freak, Gay Edgar Hoover, Dr. Khalid called him Gay Edgar Hoover. Because check this out. Did you ever heard a clip by Billy, I think it was Reverend Billy Kyle, who said, he was saying it, and the words is as clear as day, Brother Siddiqui. He says that, I knew they were going to shoot my brother on the balcony, so I ducked because I knew I didn't want to take the bullet, so I ducked because I knew they was going to shoot my brother. He said that's about Dr. King. So he pretty much admitted that he was part of the setup to kill Dr. King.
Yeah, that's a shot statement.
Who was I saying again, Brother Siddiqui?
That was the, you know, you're absolutely correct. That was the piece that Reverend Kyle's made that he stepped aside for a clear shot.
Exactly, that's right. So this Negro pretty much admitting that he was part of that thing. And see, when you talk, Brother Dick, about that photographer that was FBI informant, see, this is what the white man do, and this is what Minister Farrakhan has said for years, and black people don't get it. The white man will use these silly Negroes and stuff, and then as soon as they die, he don't let the legacy, all that dirt that you do, go with you to the grave. He pulled out of you. He won't let your people know that you're a traitor. So when that Negro died, I forgot that he was Ernest. I think his name was Ernest something or whatever. When he died, they let you know that he was an FBI informant. Now, here, Dr. King and them, they was letting his brother travel around with them because, you know, because he's a black man. They figured we can trust this brother. The whole time, they didn't know this Negro was out there betraying them, running back to Gay Hoover and the rest of them, telling little things on Dr. King, this and that. And for all we know, he could have been part of that setup to make sure that Dr. King came out in that balcony, because, like, I don't trust Jesse. I don't trust Billy Callum, obviously, and so the other Negroes that was part of Dr. King's inner circle, because I still believe that them Negroes definitely purposely led Dr. King on that balcony to get assassinated. You know what I mean? And it's sad that we don't have ways we can continue to expose these traitors for what they are and stuff like that. And then, of course, as you well know, Brother Siddiqui, that despicable Jesse Jackson, when he had the blood of Dr. King on his jacket, on his shirt, saying that Dr. King died in his arm, which was a lie. And he was all over NBC and all over the news media with Dr. King's blood, with blood all over his shirt. Is that correct, Brother Siddiqui?
No, that's absolutely correct. After the assassination, while everything was going on, Jesse was doing a national tour.
You know, these Negroes are a disgrace and stuff, man. And believe me, Brother Siddiqui, that didn't get lost to me, what you were saying just now about what that guy said about the FBI guy or CIA guy, whatever it was, said about Sharpton. We don't have former informants. You know, once we got you, we got you. See, and again, we let people like Sharpton run around here, you know, being a so-called leader for our people and stuff like that, and Jesse. And I do believe, like everybody has like-minded people believe, Brother Siddiqui, that these Negroes like Jesse and Sharpton and some of the rest of them, they numbered gatekeepers. That's all they are. They talk black, and they do like, you know, it's like Brother Shaba said in Philadelphia, one of our great black scholars here in Philadelphia who made transition years ago. He says they do just enough to think that they are with you, but they are not. And to me, that was a telling statement, because you notice when high-profile shootings come out there, like Yusef Hawkins up in New York 7 years ago, Eric Garner, Jesse Sharpton, all them guys, they get out there and they bring the case to the public. So you think that they're doing just enough, and so you see them out there, you know, trying to get justice for the family. So you as a lay person, Brother Siddiqui, you say, well, hey, man, I got to get Jesse credit on that. I got to get Sharpton credit. They're out there doing this, and they bring attention to these justifiable cases of murder at the hands of these devil cops. But when you look beyond all that, you see they number traitors, top people and stuff, and that's why Brother Shago was correct when he said Jesse and people like Jesse and Sharpton and that's some of the ilk, they do just enough to think they are with you, but they are not. And that's basically what it comes down to. And so these guys, they number traitors, and they're going to continue to be traitors. That's why it's how important, Brother Siddiqui, that you and like-minded people like yourself continue to fight for the justice for Dr. King and all of our leaders that was out here struggling and who passed on, and the ones that are still out here struggling now for our people, for freedom, justice, and equality, and make sure that our people know who is for our people, who are not. Because as long as we got people like that among our people, we'll never be what we're supposed to be. Because at the end of the day, Jesse's Rainbow Push Coalition, that Rainbow thing, or Wall Street Project, whatever he runs, Sharpton's National Aspirin Network, they can never be truly free organizations as long as they're getting white dollars. Because like you said, Brother Siddiqui, soon you step out of line, the white man gonna take the money away from you. And I close with this, Brother Siddiqui, to further prove what you're saying is accurate to the Tower from the Wicked Listen audience. So about 7-8 years ago, Brother Siddiqui, Furkow was supposed to be speaking in Pittsburgh. He spoke in Pittsburgh at the invite of Bev Smith, okay? She invited the minister. And to show you how these Zionists have no respect for our people, this racist Jewish devil rabbi in Pittsburgh had the audacity to get on Bev Smith and say, how dare you invite Farrakhan? You didn't ask us for permission. I said, permission? I said, who the hell is Bev Smith, a child? That's what he said. I got the article to prove it. I can get y'all a copy of the article because I saved it. How dare you? And so I'm saying to myself, when they invite that thug, Netanyahu, to come over here and speak, don't ask back for their proud permission, but yet they're going to chastise this woman like she's some kind of child. But, and second point on that, it was a sister. Her name was Marlene something. I can't think of her last name. She was a strong Afrocentric sister, probably a black nationalist. But see, again, Brother Siddiqui, it goes back to what you said about when these people funding you, they can shake you down. Well, she was supposed to appear on the dais over in Pittsburgh with Minister Farrakhan, but guess what? They threatened her. They said, if you stand on there with Farrakhan, we're taking your funding away. So she got scared, and she rejected the invite to speak with Minister Farrakhan because she was scared the Jews were going to take her money away from him. So I'm saying to myself, how can you call yourself a black nationalist or a black revolutionary if you're getting money from our open enemy? You know, because like you said, it can shut you down. Simple as that. And that's how it is with Jesse and Sharp. They can talk all the stuff they want, but they're only going to go but so far. If you ever noticed, Brother Siddiqui, you never heard Jesse and Sharpton criticize Israel, especially Sharpton. He has never, no matter how many Palestinians have been shot down at the hands of them thugs over in Israel, you never heard Sharpton say a word, Brother Siddiqui, and there's a reason for that.
Thank you for your call, sir.
Thank you, Brother Eric.
If I may, Brother Siddiqui and Elliot, I just want to emphasize something. You can correct me, Brother Siddiqui, if I'm wrong. And I'm being redundant in that. And I'm being redundant because I think it's important. The issue is here, it sounds like, that why haven't we been able to, when we have these issues that are critical to the development of our community, in this case, the true narrative and the true push of what actually happened to Dr. King 50 years afterward, that in spite of all the Jesses, in spite of the Zionists, that we haven't been able to mobilize these different fractions within our community, haven't been able to mobilize our community to push this effort forward. Because talking about what they're doing, we're really just reemphasizing they're successful in what they're doing. The question, if I'm correct me again if I'm wrong, is are we successful in being able to touch the hearts and minds and create movement based off of the information that we have. Is that, would that be a correct assessment?
Oh, that's it, brother. You know, that's my frustration. That, you know, we talk about, you know, how we revere and honor and respect Dr. King, and we have all this information. You know, that's why I try to make it clear to folks that, you know, that whole piece about sending letters to the president, you know, that's window dressing. You know, our whole piece is in terms of putting information out there with the hopes that black people will stand up in general and say, we want to make this happen. That's why I give the example of the holiday. If you can make the holiday happen, then why can't we as a community stand up all across this country and say, you know what, we're going to get justice for Dr. King and his family. And I don't know if it's a fear of taking it on. You know, I'm like I said before, maybe that's after doing some reflection, and that's what Dick Gregory was saying to me when he said, do you know what you're getting into?
And I think you touched base on the answer, too, is because that generation, which if I'm not too presumptuous, our generation who pushed that forward, or at least supported that, either is not in the forefront. It's this next generation, and the question of, because they're there, but do they have that? And I'm saying that generation in general, I'm saying that generation that now is calling themselves the conscious community, that generation is looking up, you know, that group of young people, because it was always young people, right, that are they willing to do the organizing work within the communities that we live in to bring that information, to mobilize and organize this thing to occur? That, I think that's, you're offering the solution. It's just our, you know, because Dick Gregory, I heard that clip with Dick Gregory brought out there, and people clapped. And I see on Facebook, they're presenting it. But are they doing the organizing work in the community to amplify the message that and the information that you have? Are they bringing that to the community so that you can get that traction by us black people, which is what we have to do?
That's the big question.
Let's go to 646. 646.
Okay, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard and Siddiqui.
Yes, sir.
Listen, man, as far as I'm concerned, this ain't nothing but a bunch of BS, man. You know, what is it going to do? What is it going to solve? And what is it going to give black people if we know that the cracker killed King? It ain't nothing we can do about it. We can't even sustain ourselves in this country. No. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it?
Well, you know what? Let me say something about that, Jay. And I want Brother Siddiqui to weigh in on it. But let me give my opinion on that first. I don't think, and I'll echo the sentiments of Brother Siddiqui. And I talk about this on the program. That's why it's a need of think tanks to be established in all of these cities, similar to what Brother Siddiqui does up there in Boston with his group up there, the Black Community Information Center. Because it's not about what we're going to do to white folks about it. It's about what we need to do among ourselves. Before you mount any, and that goes to what we talked about, and we just talked about it Friday. Macandal down in Haiti knew, he was the first. The other men came along later, and women. He was the first to understand that if they were going to mount some type of independence movement, that they first need to deal with the collaborator. You got to deal with it, that issue. That's clear. That's why these things need to be discussed. And that's why I was bringing it up with Brother Siddiqui. In this case, it wasn't one individual. You know, see, in some cases in history, it was one individual that was a collaborator that you never knew who it was. And then later on, it comes out that this guy was working with the FBI. This guy was an informant. In Dr. King's case, you had several collaborators, several of them. That needs to be discussed, that the cover needs to be pulled off of these people, And it needs to be some type of mechanism among black people where this don't happen again. We can't mount any successful independent campaign with collaborators allowed to exist among our people. That's why it need to be discussed. The hell, I don't give a damn what white folks, it ain't about bringing James Earl Lloyd Jowers or anybody to any justice. You know you might not be able to do that. We can definitely do something about building blocks where this type of stuff don't happen again. Collaborators need to be exposed. And if you're going to have some of our people working with other people, we need to have mechanisms to deal with them. Now, I don't know how we're going to do it, or I don't know what method we're going to use, because we know that methods been used historically against collaborators. We got to do it. This is serious business. I ain't going to throw no cold water on this man's efforts up there in Boston.
I agree with all that you're saying, but the reality is this. Most people, or I say most black people that have a degree of consciousness, that have read some of the books and the material on Dr. King, understand clearly the role that the Negroes in Atlanta played in the murder of Martin Luther King.
Well, a lot of our people don't. You just heard a sister call on this program from Las Vegas to say that she wasn't aware of this.
No, but what I'm trying to
say
is,
she's not alone.
There are a great deal of people who are aware of it, who have some of the same information that Brother Siddiqui has, and maybe have more information than Brother Siddiqui has. And in all honesty and truthfulness, have not done nothing about it. And it is because they feel powerless. Maybe they think that it could be something else that needs to be done. But at this stage of the game, Brother Elliot, we got too many other issues going on, as far as I'm concerned, for us to be caught up in this.
Well, I can't agree with you.
And that's a legitimate feeling. And again, I mean, I know Brother Siddiqui wants you to weigh in on this, but to the thinking, Jay, I think it's important that with this issue, if you take out the issue, we're talking about the systemic reality, which is what Elliot is speaking to, because those other issues that you're talking about that has to be addressed. If we do not address from the systemic reality of what is preventing this issue
exactly
to come to the table, those other issues are not able to come to the table for the same reasons.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you can say we're going to continue to have that, but we cannot say that we cannot address. Now, we may not know who, but we have to address that may be the possibility and start going to that direction to see. And that's where the think tank, that's where the strategizing. I mean, Brother Siddiqui, I'll turn it over to you, because you're saying that the writing of the letters is just a window dressing. It isn't trying to mobilize, organize the community to address the issue.
And that's the intent. And let me just say that, you know, to the brother, when I hear the statement about what good is it going to do, and we've got a lot more important issues to deal with out here. And see, that's symptomatic in terms of the bigger picture of why we have so many problems out here. Because of the fact that, you know, when I read that letter that Mrs. King sent to me, there was nothing but pain in that letter. This is a woman who lost her husband, whose children lost their father.
She ain't the only one.
Let him finish, Jay. Hold on.
Let me just say this. Here in Boston, we have a town called Walpole, outside of the city of Boston. And so what happened was, a few years ago, there was a big deal going on, because what it is that there was this white man, 94 years old, who had retired as a machinist in that town. You know where he is right now? I don't know if he's deceased or not, but he is in prison in Israel. See, they didn't look at it as, well, and I'm not defending Israel at all, But they didn't look at it as, you know what, we got more important things to do. This old man was 94 years old, and they tracked him down and took him back. So what I'm saying is that the bigger picture here is that that type of mentality is a reflection of how we're operating right now and why we're in the dilemma that we are. That's my frustration, because of the fact to say that we got, this is a black man that died for black people. And we're talking about, yeah, we got important issues out here, but how can we say that we got more important things when, for me, it's a matter of neglect and delinquency when this black man who gave his life for black people, and we got a holiday for all these celebrations, and we're talking about we got more important things? I said, no, we don't have more important. Yeah, we got important things to do, but this is very important. And for us to just say, hey, so do we say the same thing about Malcolm? You know, the organization I'm with, we get ready to in May sponsor our 32nd annual Malcolm X Memorial Awards breakfast. We can't just set aside and say, hey, well, hey, you know, it is what it is. Let's move on. No, Dr. King was assassinated by this government, and we need to pursue this because of the fact we need to be able to send a message to our young people, particularly those of us as black men, that we're not going to just sit aside and be abused and ignore what we should be handling.
Do you know where Do you know where the flaw in your argument is whenever you use the Jew and what the Jew has done? Number one, the Jew goes after any and everybody who has anything to do with the killing of Jews. What you're doing is being selective with one Negro who is supposedly the head Negro and leader over the last 50 years, who in the process, if the truth be told, was nothing but a damn disaster, as far as I'm concerned. Now, whenever we get to once we get to the point to where as we put that same energy and effort into Fred Hampton, into all of the other blacks who were killed, and we go after the people who did that to them on a collective like the Jew does, bro, I'm telling you straight up how I feel. I give less than a damn about Martin Luther King because there's other people who are just as important to the development of black folks and who fought just as hard for black folks as Martin Luther King that don't get credit. I know brothers now who've been in jail for 40 and 50 years for what they've done for black folks, and Negroes don't give a damn about them. Don't even write them and don't do nothing for them. So I could care less about some Negro because he was AKA the dreamer. He was AKA the leader who tried to integrate us into madness that could destroy people's lives. The hell with Martin Luther King. That's how I feel.
That's an unfortunate mindset, brother. Look, I'm a black nationalist and I'm not into nonviolence, and I did not necessarily agree with the politics of Dr. King, because I think that integration has been a disaster for black people.
Certainly.
But you know what? That black man gave us his life for black people.
He did.
And he ain't the only one, though.
That's enough.
That's what we're talking about, Jay.
The whole thing about folks who died for us. But I'm saying the bottom line is that it's a matter of neglect. It's not about who you support politically. I mean, I'm down with Brother Hanson. He was a black nationalist.
You're missing the point, though, Jay.
I'm
a little emphatic about this in this sense. Again, if you're saying from the perspective of who you personally, the individual Jay, support and don't support. That's, you got that. We all have the right to do that as individuals. And we are going to celebrate those individuals that we feel that we need to be supported. But what's being addressed, what Brother Siddiqui is addressing, is not that part of the question. It's the other part of the point that you're making, which is, why isn't the persons that you want to be supported
also by the people called black people supported with the same intensity as anybody, any other people would do for their people. And that's the issue of coming out of the Dr. King that Brother Siddiqui is bringing up, and he is specifically raising, is if I'm hearing him correctly, is saying, yes, he needs to be celebrated. I am advocating for the recognition that he should be, his crime should be brought to the table. But I am frustrated to understand, why is it that black people who and that's the group who recognize, they may not be the same group that recognize Fred Hampton, but the people who recognize Fred Hampton and the injustice that was occurred by Fred Hampton is not out in the streets pushing for the, as you say, the recognition or the understanding that this is not going to take place by us, by anybody. We have to answer that question. Why is it that our people in general are not doing that? And he's pushing Dr. King. You could be pushing Fred Hampton. Somebody else could be pushing someone else. But the issue is the same. Black people, in none of those circumstances, we just had a brother on talking about health, in none of those circumstances are pushing for this problem to be resolved. And the question that Elliot is saying, until we study it, until we get the proper information, we will not be able to make it, the transformation occur. And that's all that's happening. So it isn't about whether Dr. King is who you support. It's the question that you also are raising, why we black people aren't pushing for all our people to be supported.
Yeah.
Well, I would say this. If we're going to start dealing with this matter in regard to the death of Martin Luther King, you need to start with Jesse and those that was in his circle that's still alive and deal with them in the same manner that, you know, the Jews deal with the Nazis. You know what I mean? Because them are the true Nazis. It's not like they don't know what's going on. I mean, if you're saying out in public and it's public known that Jesse's been a liar since the man got shot, and here it is, he's being and seen as a major leader, that should tell you or tells me that he's as complicit in the murder as the United States government is. That's the argument that needs to be put forward. Maybe that'll rattle some feathers.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That's
because it seems to me that, you know, sometimes you got to take drastic measures to get things on and popping. And maybe somebody needs to confront Jesse, or maybe they need to have some sort of picking in Jesse and putting it out there, propaganda like others do, to maybe have him come clean. Because I know a lot of people in the nationalist community, they got a lot of opinions about old Messy Jesse, you know what I mean, and Abernathy and all of them. Because the one thing I know over these last 50 years, and it's amazing if you really think about it, all of those Negroes and their families have done quite well in America. That right there should tell you nothing. Something, because I don't know none of them Negroes that live in from hand to mouth. Think about that. None of them. But then the revolutionaries that were the real, real stalwarts of the movement who stood up and who didn't go along with that Martin Luther thing, they either in jail or dead. What do that tell you? That's what I'm talking about. That's my issue. I don't care about this situation. I want to see our people moving forward. You know what I'm saying? I want to see us, and as far as I'm concerned, I wish, to be honest with you, we as a people would forget about Malcolm, forget about Martin, and forget about all the Negroes
That's well, Jay, let me say this before we move. Okay, I'll say it while you're there. Let me say this before you move on. Starting anew and moving on and forgetting about all them, don't take away the issue of what we've been talking about.
I agree.
It don't take away the issue of that no other people do with anybody that they're rallying behind. The collaborator. That's been a problem, especially since we've been here on these shores of these United States of America.
So would you say, have we dealt with the collaborator?
Say that again.
Would you say, have we ever, as a people, dealt with the collaborator? Would you offer?
Well, see, but that's what I'm talking about.
We have ever dealt with the collaborator.
Wait a minute, Jay.
That's
what I'm talking about. We got to come up with a way as a people we're going to deal with this. Brother Siddiqui just gave an example of how those other folks that call themselves Jews as a people deal with this issue. They're not talking about, oh, I didn't like so-and-so anyway. See, black people got to get out of that foolishness. It ain't about liking King or anybody else.
That's right.
These Jews get behind it because they're Jews. We got to get behind these. Excuse me. We got to get behind these people. Because they gave their life for our people. King didn't know. What he did affected thousands of people, millions maybe black people across this country. He didn't know those people. He didn't know them. He gave his life for them. Malcolm the same way. Fred Hampton the same way. Listen, I ain't going to get on here and say, well, I ain't like King, but I like Fred Hampton. I like black people if they're fighting for our people. And nobody's perfect. Everybody done made mistakes. You, me, everybody else, King, and all the rest of them.
I make them every day. But the point is that at some point in time, you gotta let it go and move forward.
Well, you ain't going to move forward until we deal with this issue.
Let me just say this.
Thanks for your call, Jay.
Have a good day. I got to run.
All right.
Talk to y'all.
Let me just say that. See, there's a bigger picture here, Brad. I think he referred to it. You know, this is not just about Dr. King.
No.
You know, this is about what you've been saying about how we function as a people. What other group do you know of that would have someone of Dr. King's magnitude and say, I didn't like him, or we got to move on to other issues? And see, this breaks down also to the whole thing in terms of what's a big problem out here from my perspective, and that we as black men are not asserting ourselves and playing the role that we should be in terms of leadership out here to the extent that we're seen as punks out here.
Yep.
We're seen as punks. And this is a prime example. How are you going to talk about you don't like Dr. King? I didn't necessarily agree to politics, but I had respect for that brother.
You had to.
But he did.
Yeah.
And so we as a, like you're saying, we as a community should be stepping up, not only around the assassination of Dr. King, but there's a lot of things that we should be dealing with that we're not as black men. We're seen as punks. I tell people, I said, look, I'm a grandfather. I said, there's always been a police problem. I said, but you know what? Part of my training was that whenever you get confronted by a cop, you look him in the eye. Not aggressive, but you make it clear that you ain't in fear. But this whole thing about I'm putting my hands on the dashboard and blah, blah. No. We didn't do none of that. And so we're seen as punks. Police used to approach us with caution. Now they feel like they can just abuse us. And there's no problem. So I'm just saying it filters right on down through the ranks of what we're doing on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And this whole piece about Dr. King is an example of that, that someone of that magnitude who gave his life for black people, we're talking about it's time to move on to something else because there's other things we need to deal with. There are, but we should be moving on beyond this. We should be handling this.
Let's grab a couple more. In fact, let me go to caller, Newport News.
Yes, did you unmute me?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to try to make this quick. Much respect for you, Brother Siddiqui, and I'm not going to attack the young man that just got off the phone. But for somebody to tell me about they don't like Martin Luther King, I'm going to put it in this analogy. I had an uncle that served 30-some years in the Army. That's like a foot soldier trying to tell me he's mad at the airmen or the artillery people. This is a multifaceted approach. Jews use a multifaceted approach. You can't forget your history and expect to have any kind of future. I'm going to run across some quick names because I actually grew up in this era, and I heard older folks talking about this long before I knew who Brother Siddiqui was. Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson had Clint Murchison, H.L. Hunt, Nelson Rockefeller, David Rockefeller, and guess who Nelson Rockefeller's aide was? Henry Kissinger. The reason I'm running these names off, guess who else was a young man in that collaborated in the Lyndon Johnson administration? George Herbert Walker Bush, who later became CIA. All of those same people not only helped the Dulles brothers take out JFK, Martin Luther King was taken out for the very same reason Fred Hampton was. Fred Hampton went down to the poor South and started trying to explain to poor white people that they had as much invested in fighting this corrupt system as the niggas did. So when somebody comes on and tell you about they don't like Martin Luther King because he did that, I'm not trying to put down anybody who's raising their consciousness and fighting the battle against the corrupt system. Now, the other part I want to touch on, the reason it's important to get to the truth, if you have any kind of inkling of some kind of religious morality, the pursuit of truth is never worthless. And the only way we're going to get our kids to stop buying into the fallacies and the propaganda of this system is to go back and force the truth to be exposed. So I applaud you, Brother Siddiqui, and I'm going to try to follow you and keep up with it. And another reason I say this is because not only did they take out King, because he did the very same thing. His poor parents marched. What did he do? He was one of, I had his full speeches on vinyl for years. I had to study him the last 2 years in high school. One of the things that led to him getting a bullet is he made a speech telling them, "We're coming when we go before D.C. this time, we're coming to get our paycheck." He started talking about the system. Another reason he was taken out, he held this country accountable for the ruthless stuff they were doing to colored people all over the planet. And LBJ told him that he needed to mind his business and stay domestic. And he said he had a moral obligation to speak out about the corruptness that this system was perpetrating across the globe. So for somebody to tell you that they don't like him or whatever, just narrow-minded. And sometimes you just got to ignore those kind of people. I applaud your work, brother.
Thank you for your call, sir. Let me grab 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, and good evening to the guests, Mr. Kamban.
No, Brother Siddiqui.
You hear me?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Brother Marcus.
No problem. You know, in a kind of sense, you know, I kind of agree with Gia, you know. Now, you have those who, if, you know, who want to get on the bandwagon with Martin Luther King, fine. You know, that's no problem because, as you said, that is one strategy. But, you know, we have to remember that, you know, that ain't the first time they tried to kill Martin Luther King, you know. They stabbed him when he was in Harlem. Remember, a black woman stabbed him on 125th Street because he was an integrationist, you know. And you know, Harlem is predominantly black nationalist, you know. And then just remember that Stanley Levinson was one of his main advisors, his financial advisor, you know, a Jew, you know. So you know, he was a brave man, but really, you know, that is not the solution for black people. We know that, you know, but it was a strategy, you know, and it's unfortunate the way it ended. But again, integration won't solve black people problem because we know that the white people don't want no integration either. Because if we were to integrate in his society and integrate with his woman, and that is genetic annihilation for him. Because our germ plasma is more dominant than him. So that ain't no strategy for us. You know, Marcus Garvey, that is the strategy and the solution. But again, as I said, you know, you have that element, you know, who want to support that as a strategy?
fine, but I wouldn't put my, you know, trust behind him. You know, his program, my program is Africa, because that is the solution for black people. That is where black people solution lie. That is where the mass majority of black people are. And that is where our power base is. It's not here with these white folks, because 500 years have demonstrated it. If there was any human relationship to be worked out, we could have done it in 500 years. Anyway, thank you, and I'll continue listening.
Hey, Brother Marcus, before you go, you still there?
Yes.
Let me ask you one question. Because I don't think anybody here, at least on the panel tonight that's been talking, was in favor of integration strategy. But let me ask you this in relation to King and Marcus Garvey. What we already talked about, what led to King's assassination and who was involved. What brought Marcus Garvey down and the organization to a certain extent?
Well, it was the main thrust of it was the Jew. It was instrumental in Garvey's.
Yeah, but You're going too fast, Brother Marcus. That's what the point is of the discussion tonight. That maybe, and I'm saying maybe Jay and maybe you are missing. Nobody's talking about the integration, the strategy not going to work. Ain't nobody talking about that. We're talking about the common denominator that led to the destruction of black leaders across the board, maybe over the past 150 years. You just stated it. That's what we're talking about. That's the point. To collaborate.
This system reward bad behavior by our people. It rewards bad behavior.
Yeah, but we gotta figure out a way, because other people are not easily duped by the reward. I'm telling you. Other people are not easily duped by the reward.
Yeah, because we don't have no internal corrective force. We don't have an internal corrective force.
Well, that's what we're talking about.
That's why bad behavior is rewarded, because they know ain't nothing going to happen. We ain't going to do nothing. We're just going to go kneel on and go pray or go cry. You see, so the collaborator know, say, hey, ain't nothing going to happen. But when the collaborator know that there is a penalty to be paid, you will definitely see a change.
And
Brother Siddiqui is raising the point of his frustration is that that being the solution in general, the question comes in, then why haven't we been able to put in place over this last 150 years, and really we could say in North America, even longer, because that was what Harriet Tubman was talking about, right? And those voices we don't even know about, that are historical symbols of trying to get the freedom and having us prevent that movement from occurring.
We got to raise the revolution up a notch, brother, as we said, we have to have an internal corrective force to deal with these, bad acting characters in our community that get rewarded for bad behavior. So until we reach that point, we're going to be here just beating up our gums, because the collaborator is going to go. And then the collaborator, he doesn't even realize that when the white man finish with him, he get rid of him too. He said the collaborator is so stupid, he get crumbs, and then when it is necessary for the European to get rid of him, he get rid of his ass too, you see? So it's just, our head is really, really screwed up,
But Brother Siddiqui raises another thing, and I apologize for speaking for you, Brother Siddiqui, in relationship to, yes, those are the ones who are offered something.
But within our community, there are people who are collaborators that don't even know they're collaborators, and they're not even offered anything. And we have to put something in place to deal with that in order to be operating as a people to deal with the issue that, and Brother Siddiqui is just bringing, one of our fallen leaders, one of our fallen examples of moral leadership. Regardless of strategy, moral leadership against an immoral system for people who have been saying their captivity has been brought to bear for in a immoral relationship.
I will leave you with this. I will leave you with this statement. You know, somebody said it to me, an old nationalist said it to me. He said, black people have no friends outside of the race. And currently, we have very few friends within. So we have a big dilemma. But we, as I said, we are not stupid people now. You know, we ain't been on this earth here being stupid this long, you know. So we're going to figure out a way to get out of this predicament. We ain't just, you know, in time. But because this thing, as I said, is cracking, you know. It's cracking at the seams. And, you know, they say when all else fails to organize the people, conditions will. So when the condition get bad enough, when our people start feeling some hunger pains, you're going to see a change. And we take care, good brothers.
Thank you for your call, sir.
All right.
Brother Siddiqui?
Yes, sir.
Interesting discussion tonight, man. And
you know, for me, it's like the bottom line is that when you look at Dr. King, now when he was talking about using the same bathrooms and restaurants, the forces of white supremacy, they were good with that. And see, that's why the brother who called in is when Dr. King started talking about he's realizing that integration was running into a burning house,
mm-hmm.
and started telling black people, you know what, you need to invest in black banks, we need to have what we need. He met with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, with Malcolm, when he started moving in that direction, and that's when the forces of evil, white supremacy, definitely said he got to go, particularly when he started criticizing the war. So the bottom line is that he was talking about what it would take for black people to do for self, and that's when they made a decision he had to go. So we can't put him in the category of, you know, well, he just caught the attention of folks and talked about the dream. When he started talking about the nightmare, that's when the decision was made that he had to be taken out. So, you know, he was a warrior out here for black people, and we can't, you know, move away from that fact. And at the very least, like I said, with the letter from Mrs. King, I mean, I could feel the pain in her letter.
Mm.
And I'm saying, how do you disconnect from something like that based on your quote-unquote politics? Can't do it.
Listen, and your work and what you were doing led her to write you a letter. She didn't write it to me. She didn't write it to Richard. She wrote it to you because of your efforts. So, listen, you know, any of the work.
I don't want to cut you off. She wrote that letter to the community.
Okay. All right.
Because her whole position was, we as a King family have done what we can. Now it's up to the community to do what's necessary to bring these people to justice.
Okay.
So, I received the letter. But it was a letter to the community.
Okay. Okay. Listen, before you get, can you got room for one more call?
Yes, sir.
How are you situated, Richard?
I'm good.
Let's go to DC. DC, caller, what's your name? Where you calling from?
Hopefully, I don't know if you're talking to me, but
yes.
This is Sean, Washington, D.C.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm just kind of listening, and I've only been listening for probably like the last 10 minutes, but I listened to the brother earlier, and all I want to say is that, you know, we can't, in terms of Dr. Martin Luther King, we can't, you know, throw the, you know, baby out with the bathwater in terms of leaders and leadership. And I take that general premise in that, you know, Martin had something to offer. Marcus had something to offer. Malcolm had something to offer. And we can't, you know, get caught up in, you know, what they did do and what they didn't do. What we need to do in 2018 is we need to move forward. And, you know, they may have made certain mistakes, but we need to pick and choose, and we need to pick and choose their strengths. All of them are leaders. All of them are valuable. All of them are to be celebrated and honored. I really kind of hurts me to, you know, we're going back and forth. Not you, and I'm figuratively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are going to pick, you know, we're going to pick apart, you know, Martin, you know. I mean, that's just ridiculous in 2018. I mean, we got to get, you know, we have to have our focus a little bit more on the prize, you know, eyes on the prize. And I think that was something that he, you know, kind of, valued. So for me, let me just tell you this. I just started a group, and today was my first day of my study group. And we did a study group around Dr. Claude Anderson's new book, The Black History Reader, 101 Questions That You Never Thought to Ask. And in that group, I actually thought about Martin in that group and some of his principles. And in one of the goals that I told the group that chimed in on my line today, who I spoke with, I said, think about what you want to do at the end of what we learned. And I want to have a specific charge and challenge for anything that you learn within this group, within this conversation. How are you? I want every person to demonstrate, how are you going to catapult that or take that into your community? And what I also said is that whatever community you choose as part of this group, I want the first community to be the community that is considered, you know, project or, you know, a community that is underserved, undervalued. And that is strictly important to me, because there's one thing in the theme of Dr. Martin Luther King that I've always held to. It was a people's campaign. And when you started digging deep outside of what they just showed or told you in your history books and your 12th grade history class, the Poor People's Campaign was funneled and fueled by poor people. So in modern day terms, in 2018, those are the people in the projects, those are the people who are in the streets, who are not, you know, maybe as intellect as we are. But at the end of the day, most of the bourgeois, or what we would call in modern day, bourgeoisie, lay, whatever you want to call them, they did not support King. It's the poor people. That's why they call it the Poor People's Campaign. It's the people in the projects, the average Jane Joes, who elevated and made that movement happen. So we have to understand that he is a radical, okay? And we have to understand his teachings outside of the teachings that they give us in the school. And that's why, Elliot, I think you always give that rendition and you give that callback when he was calling for things that were like economic boycotts and things like that. He was a radical. You know, there was nothing punkish about Martin Luther King, okay? He did the best that he could do in his terms. And people need to understand that he was not favored. He was a radical. All the bourgeois in his day were against him. The people who elevated him were the poor people. So just take that and just try to, in your mind, put that to 2018 and do introspective. Look at your modern mayor, whatever state you're in. There's a bunch of people from different states on this call. Think about your local mayor. What is your mayor doing? Is your mayor a radical? Are they fighting against, are they fighting for poor people? What are they doing? So take what Martin Luther King did and try to, in an introspective way, bring him to 2018. Take your local politician and do an evaluation. What are they doing? They're not doing anything. They're not going up against the grain. They're not fighting the system. They're not fighting for poor people. That's exactly what Martin Luther King did in his day. So we got to bring it to modern day. He fought against a lot. He was a radical, okay? He fought against the system, okay? And at the end of the day, the bourgeoisie, the elite, and the people in power didn't even, his own compadres didn't even support him. He fought against all of that. So that's somebody that I honor. And I'm not going to throw him out, and he's not any, he's nobody's sucker. To me, he's a soldier. If you can bring him into modern day understanding, because that stuff is in the past, and nobody should get on this pipeline and this phone and not understand that. You got to understand the time and the dynamics of which he was maneuvering. He was a soldier, and he did what he needed to do. There's a whole lot of people in 2018 that ain't did what he did. So there's no way that I'm ever going to discount what he did. And he did the best he could. Somebody, the brother, he may have some mistakes that he may have to outline or to bring out or put Martin on Front Street. But at the same time, it's nothing you really can say about Martin, because what is it that you're doing, and what is it anybody else is doing in 2018? So we have to pick out his strengths, and hopefully I've come across on this call what his strengths are. I want people to put in perspective with that man. This is a man in a completely different time, and take the decisions that he made and think about where you are as a man, that specific caller, you man, in 2018, what kind of decisions will you make? Who will you buck up against? Do you have the strength, or do you have the courage to buck up like he did in 2018? So let's not try to debilitate or try to, hobble our elders. You know, because they are our elders at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, we are not to look to their faults. We are to look what we can take from them and what we can do in 2018 to be the new Martins and the new Malcolms and the new Marcuses. That's what I want to see, and that's what I want to hear in these conversations on the radio waves. And Brother Siddiqui, I'm sorry to... thank you, and you're the guest, and I'm honored to kind of be in this conference call with you, but I had to put that out about that brother who's beating down on Martin. Yeah.
Thank you for your call.
So the Martins, the Malcolms, and the Marcuses in 2018, we don't need to be beating them down. You need to, as men, figure out how you're going to be the new Martins and the new Malcolms and the new Marcuses. And that's what I'd like to hear. And I love my brothers. I love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Brother Siddiqui.
Leave it to the sister to give us perspective. It's always good.
You know, before we leave you this evening, you know, you made mention earlier about other people looking at black men like they're chumps and punks. I placed a clip on the Time for Awakening page. It was last week, if I'm not mistaken. It was a pizza shop in Pittsburgh. It was either a Greek or Italian pizza shop. And you could see that all the workers in there was the same nationality, Greek or Italian. And a black woman came in and had a problem with evidently what she had received. And she was going back and forth with one of the salesmen. So evidently, the owner came out and grabbed her threw her to the floor, banged her head on the floor several times, twisted her arm, and physically threw her out the door. Now, the next day, it was a brother out there, and he had organized the community. It looked like it's about maybe 75 people out there in front of the place and blocked people from coming in and said, why would this man abuses women? But it goes to your point that you mentioned, Brother Siddiqui, that this nationality figure he would put his hands on a woman, bang her head to the floor several times, physically abuse her, and toss her out the door. You know, who does that to a woman? And who would, listen, I'm a business owner. I wouldn't do that to a woman. If a white woman came in my place and carry on, I mean, I would ask her to leave or escort her out. But I wouldn't physically bang her, I mean, put my hands on her in that fashion. That's somebody that didn't have any fear of retribution from black men. To put his hands physically on a woman and did what he... Richard, I don't know whether you've seen... Did you see the video of that?
Yeah, I seen it.
I mean, who would do that? So, well, those are the type of things. We can't allow this anymore. Any disrespect on... And I just use that as an example of disrespect that other nationalities feel towards black people.
The other thing, too, is I just want to... clarify just in terms of like folks want to reach out to us.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So when I hear this is from DC, I'm the director of the Black Community Faces Center here in Boston, but also the Nubian Leadership Circle. You know, I do a blog, and folks can go to that at www.nubianleadershipcircle.com, and they can get the blog entry about Dr. King and others. But also, for the benefit of the sister from DC, is that the energy that we're having going on right now is that we're trying to bring together national black leadership all across the country with a common agenda. And so for folks who want to reach out, they can call 202-540-0267. That's 202-540-0267 for more information, because of the fact that we're trying to build this, and they can contact the Nubian Leadership Circle at that number.
Brother Siddiqui, I want to thank you for your work, man, and we'll be in touch. Listen, you said you do a blog. I'd like to post a lot of your blogs on the Time for Awakening page.
Well, I've got your email, bro, so you're good to go.
Forward them to me, and I'll post it. And we'll have you back on periodically, because what you're doing in two cities is something that needs to go on. In fact, the sister called up, and what she's doing – Richard, right. That's all of what we're talking about. These right. think tanks talking about strategies on how to move our people forward is spreading, and it's spreading. We can see it is spreading. That's what's going to change this dynamic. Then we'll come up with solutions. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I just wanted to say, you know, and the question that you raised, Brother Siddiqui, because to me it is the systemic thinking. Because we have to come to the answer. Now, it's not just the collaborators. How do we move? How do we energize our community around issues? Because even if we have the leadership, if the individual go there, look how long it took them in Mississippi when SNCC went into that town to be able to organize them politically. Well, now I would argue that the energy is even lower. Because, as somebody else said, the condition seems more looser. So we have to really get our thinking around that. And what you raised this evening, from what I get, is how much work we have to do in that area of dealing with, and this goes to your point, Elliot, of how will we deal with the collaborators, those who are paid and those who are unpaid. And that might be any one of us in relationship to stopping us from getting either true freedom, power, or being able to exercise our, birthright, wherever we are.
Brother Siddiqui, listen, thanks for being with us, man, and I'll be in touch with you, brother.
Right. We'll stay connected.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Peace. Richard, you know, yeah. spirited discussion that we had tonight, yeah. even with both of our guests. But, yeah. you know, I appreciated Brother Siddiqui and his work because mm-hmm. that type of work needs to go on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't necessarily want to put a strain on what he's doing and I don't like his approach or anything like that. I'm just talking about the work of mm-hmm. organizing our people, organizing around issues that affect our people and how mm-hmm. we're going to deal with them. That's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And why aren't our people willing on their own to be organized around the issues that is visibly in front of us, whether it be about our health condition, obesity, whether it be about our mental state, our education, whether it be about our fallen leaders who have been assassinated. You know, these are things that we should be, you know, as an individual, should be willing to move forward on, and we're not. We have to answer. We have to come up with why is that so that we can make that happen.
Well, I agree, man. You know, you mentioned about some of our people that are paid to do these things and some of our people that are not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it reminds me of a movie I saw. I don't know whether you ever saw it, Richard. It was called 10,000 Black Men Named George. You ever mm-hmm. seen that?
Oh, well, I never heard of
it. Well, it was about Philip Randolph and his organizing of the sleeping car porters. Started in 1915, I think.
Mm-hmm.
1918. When he was asked to be involved because he had been doing some other organizing, but he wasn't a porter. So in the movie, Andre Brower played Philip Randolph, and Charles Dutton played one of the organizers out of Chicago. Mario Van Peebles was in it. He was an organizer. And Brock Peters was an old man that was a porter, a former slave, and he was with them in the organizing. And in organizing, now it took them 12 years to finally organize the sleeping car porters as a black union. Now you can imagine over the 12 years, mm-hmm. in the movie it kind of told you the trials and tribulations, and it was more tribulations, putting the organization together. Soon as Pullman, the George Pullman organization, found out it was blacks trying to organize in certain cities, you know, a lot of them was attacked,
yeah,
killed, fired, things of that nature. Well, near the culmination of the movie, Mario Van Peebles, who was one of their staunch organizers, was beaten to within an inch of his life. And Charles Dutton, who was a strong organizer out of Chicago, he came to the meeting that night, and he was upset. He said, "We got a rat among our organization, and we got to smoke him out. We got a rat." I mean, he wanted to physically hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, they had the meeting, and Brock Peters, who was an old man in the movie, admitted that he was the rat.
Mm-hmm.
And Andre Brown and them looked at him like, why did you do this? Why? And his answer was, "I did it because George Pullman asked me to." He said, that's what he said. It wasn't like he got any extra money or anything else. He said he did it because he asked me to.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of goes with what you're saying, Richard, about some mm-hmm. of our people is doing this stuff and they ain't getting nothing for it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing it. That's the point that we're right. talking about.
And don't even have to be asked. That makes it even another layer.
Yeah, but that was an interesting movie, I guess, for our listening audience. 10,000 Black Men Named George. Yeah, check it out. It kind of told the story of the genesis of the organization of sleeping car porters.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting program this evening. Monday starts out our lineup again with African Perspectives. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. with Brother Oshi. I know that Brother Oshi had a death in the family, so I don't know whether he'll be having a live show tomorrow. It might be a tape a podcast of the program. But either way, African Perspectives will be on tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Wednesday. Revive is back with Sister POC. That's Wednesday evening, 8 to 10 on Thursday. Us Lifting Us, a Black Economic program is on Thursday evening, 9 to 11. On Friday, Time for Awakening is back, 8 to 10 on Friday evening. On Saturday, SST with Troy Wilmore on Saturday mornings, 10 to 12. And, oh, you know what? I forgot. And they haven't been streaming the past 2 weeks. They've been streaming, but not on Time for an Awakening. Still working out some of the kinks. But Let's Buy Black365.com is doing a program tomorrow, also tomorrow evening, 8 to 10. So we got to work out some of the kinks. Hopefully I can be able to knock those things out between tonight and tomorrow, where there'll be streaming on Time for Awakening on YouTube and also timeforawakening.com. So we're still working that out. But so just keep your ears peeled and eyes peeled for Let's Buy Black365.com, because they're going to be doing something that we're not doing and several of the other programs are not doing. They're going to be streaming video and audio.
Mm.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. And I think our guest that was with us this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children. Soon it will be their chance to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. Farmer.